Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. Take the sky from me. There's no place I can see since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Hello, me. Meet the real me. My misfits' way of life. A dark black past is my most valued possession. Hindsight is always 20/20, but looking back, it's still a bit fuzzy. Speak of mutually assured destruction. Nice story. Tell me, gotcha.
Feeling paranoid.
But never tame. It gives me a migraine headache. Sinking down to your level. Yeah, just keep on thinking it's my fault. And stay an inch or two out of kicking distance. Mankind has got to know his limit.
And cross the board just like the wall.
I just want to break this down one more time.
One thing I've never tried to do, and I think none of us can do in public office, is suggest that because somebody doesn't agree with me, that they're victims or they're unpatriotic.
The problem is that the way Bush has done it over the last 8 years is to take out a credit card from the Bank of China in the name of our children, driving up our national debt from $5 trillion for the first 42 presidents. Number 43 added $4 trillion by his lonesome, so that we now have over $9 trillion of debt that we are going to have to pay back. $30,000 for every man, woman, and child. That's irresponsible. It's unpatriotic. That's irresponsible. It's unpatriotic.
That's what Congress is threatening to do. Just saying, I'm not going to pay the bills. There are consequences to that. The bill collector starts calling you, right? Your credit goes south, and you got all kinds of problems. Same is true for a country. So if we don't raise the debt ceiling, we're deadbeats. If we fail to increase the debt limit, we would send our economy into a tailspin. That's a quote, by the way, what I just said. You know who said it? The Republican Speaker of the House, John Boehner.
And doesn't that suggest that we are going to go into a default situation because no one is talking to each other about how to resolve this?
Well, no, Major. I think if you look at the history, getting votes for the debt ceiling is always difficult. And budgets in this town are always difficult. I went through this just last year. So there's a very simple solution to this. Congress authorizes us to pay our bills. Now, if the House and the Senate want to give me the authority so that they don't have to take these tough votes, If they want to put the responsibility on me to raise the debt ceiling, I'm happy to take it.
Who would lend money to the United States of America without the full faith and credit of the government to promise to pay it back? It's just the president's promise. He's not going to be president forever.
Well, he would send an extremely negative message to investors and governments and people all around the world that you've just given the president has taken a blank check for the White House,
right.
And this president is in a spending mood. He would send a terrible message around the world.
I think that this is a political threat by the Democrats.
So you think it's just a threat?
Yes.
If push comes to shove at the last minute, do you think the president will do it? Yes
no.
or no?
No,
I don't think he
will do it. It would wreak havoc on the bond markets. It would be profoundly unlawful. The promise to repay wouldn't be worth the paper that it wasn't written on because president can't issue a note on his own. The Constitution couldn't be clearer.
All right. Judge.
Now, the question is, when's the last time Mrs. Pelosi and company read the Constitution?
It's unpatriotic. It is to take out a credit card from the Bank of China in the name of our children, driving up our national debt. So I just want to break this down one more time.
In case you haven't been keeping up. Raising the debt ceiling, which has been done over 100 times, does not increase our debt.
So I just want to break this down one more time.
This has been the fiscally most irresponsible administration that we have seen. I mean, we have increased the national debt, almost doubled it since George Bush took office. It is now over $9 trillion. And that is money that we're all going to have to pay back.
So I just want to break this down one more time.
My suggestion to the Speaker has been and will continue to be, let's stop the excuses. Let's take a vote in the House. Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Driving up our national debt, it's unpatriotic.
Harry Reid and the Democrats want to force Obamacare down our throats. They've shut down the government, blocked veterans from national monuments. What's next? Obamacare is unaffordable, unworkable, and it's unfair. Go to don'tfundit.com and sign the national petition to defund Obamacare. Join the 2 million Americans who've signed the don'tfundit.com petition to stop this train wreck. That's don'tfundit.com. Senate Conservatives Fund is responsible for the content of this message.
The White House, Democrats, and squishy rhinos in the GOP are engaged in a theatrical debate about raising the debt ceiling or defaulting on the U.S. government's obligations, and they are sweating bullets as thousands of truckers descend on the Imperial City to really shut it down. Corporatist media, from MSLSD all the way to Fox News, is amping up the fear of default and economic meltdown. This is merely a rhetorical trick to get you to believe that the current shutdown showdown over short-term continuing resolutions to fund appropriations is somehow linked to raising the debt ceiling or defaulting on interest payments. Why? In order to frighten you into giving up the grassroots pressure you are placing on Congress to actually follow the Constitution, fund the federal government, delay Obamacare, and cut spending, or at least not increase it. Yet there are conservative Liberty representatives in both chambers who need your continued and increased help in standing up for the rule of law and turning the runaway government back toward the constitutional republic and fiscal sanity. The myth of the debt ceiling, that it's tied to the CR, the shutdown and default, is just that, a myth. The fact is there are enough tax receipts, actually more than enough, to cover the interest on the debt, which avoids default, and also cover Social Security, Medicare, and necessary defense spending. Nevertheless, if the Fed, which is not a federal agency, it's a private bank, keeps devaluing the currency, coupled with the added regulatory tax and economic burden of Obamacare, then default is inevitable. So what you need to do is send a grassroots tsunami and force the squishy rhinos to stand with the real conservatives and defenders of liberty to delay Obamacare, to cut spending, avoid default, and don't fall for the fear-mongering that the debt ceiling has anything to do with ending the shutdown. This is a game of chicken right now, and you win the game of chicken if you don't flinch. Conservatives won in 1995 because Newt Gingrich didn't flinch, and Clinton, who's smarter and more competent than Obama, was brought to the negotiating table, and the leftist ratchet of government was moved back toward the right. Remember, the era of big government was over after both shutdowns, not before. Now is not the time to flinch. Now is the time to strike a victory for liberty. If you love liberty and the Constitution that protects it, whether you're an independent American of good conscience from Occupy, Tea Party, conservative, libertarian, or whatever other label you want to call yourself, even if you're uninvolved, it's time to send a grassroots tsunami to the Imperial City and demand limited government. This is not a partisan or ideological issue. It's not about health care, insurance reform, furloughed federal employees for, quote, not borrowing more money. It is fabricated debt ceiling crap, okay? But this is a matter of survival. Are we turning back toward the Republic or continuing the decline of this perilous nation, accelerating down the road to serfdom and a police state at home and empire abroad? Liberty is yours to lose. Will you fight? Will you keep the pressure on the rhinos to not cave? Will you defend the Constitution and stand with those who are? Send a tsunami. Don't let the squishes cave. Don't let the Democrats and Obama hold you hostage on behalf of the bankers. We don't need to raise the debt ceiling to end the shutdown, pay our bills, or delay Obamacare. You are live with Rex and Trog. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from the Imperial City, where traffic has been especially light thanks to all the furloughed government employees who apparently are non-essential, which makes you wonder why they're even hired in the first place. But tomorrow that's about to change because thousands of truckers are going to descend on the Imperial City to actually shut it down. I'm planning on staying off the highways. We are joined tonight by our special guest host, Chris, you are live with Rex. Welcome to the insanity.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, now. Yeah, it is. Pretty wild. I'm kind of excited about to see what the truckers, how many of them end up showing up and, you know, whatnot. I haven't followed it very closely because it takes everything I have to, or both of us and everybody we know, you know, trying to stay up on top of this current situation because it's shifting right now, you know, while everybody's focused on other things. So it's going to be an interesting conversation to see if we can unravel this for people.
Yeah, well, unraveling anything in the Imperial City is next to impossible. It is a quagmire, labyrinth wrapped in an enigma. It's just absolute chaos. I think it's intentionally designed that way. But I don't know. I'm kind of getting sick of talking about shutdown, Obamacare, and debt ceiling.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Until this is over, I guess we don't have much of a choice. Here we are again on Thursday. You know, we did four special shows in September in support of DontFundIt.com. By the way, there's over 2,060,000 signatures on that petition. Still not enough. There's a nation of 300 million people, of which at least 58% don't want Obamacare and they want it delayed. Why the hell aren't people signing it? You need to get the word out there. It's www.don'tfundit.com. Go there, sign it, get 10 other people to sign it. It's still valid. There's still information if you scroll down that page about the Senate whip list and who did what and who voted what way. It's a really good site, even though, you know, not funding Obamacare at this stage of the game is pretty much off the table. The idea is, as Rand Paul says, let's at least get a less bad bill, which means delaying the 20% of this horrible nightmare that hasn't already been delayed illegally by Obama himself. But we did four special shows on it. You can always listen to all the archive shows by going to Blog Talk Radio, finding the Tex and Rex show. Just go to the search function, type in Tex and Rex. It'll give you links. Go to the Tex and Rex show page. And if you scroll down that page, all the shows are there. You can listen to them in your browser or mobile device. And if you scroll down below the scrolling graphics, there's a download this episode hyperlink. Right-click on that, you can get an MP3. You can download that, play it in the MP3-enabled device, send it in an email, burn a CD, take it to your Tea Party meetings, your Campaign for Liberty meetings, Republican Party meetings, church meetings, whatever other kind of meetings you go to, AA, NA, I don't care. Just take it to the meetings, get people involved, get them informed. Sharing the show doesn't mean that you endorse everything that we say or our style or anything like that. It just merely means that you heard something that was interesting and you think somebody should take a listen to it. So please share the show. And remember, since they're always available in archive, you can share the show after we broadcast and keep sharing it. And thank you to all of you who are supporting us by sharing the show. When you see it on Facebook and you like the picture, I always put a picture that's relevant to the topic of the show. This week it was a picture of Obama, what he said in 06, and then what he said in 2013, which is basically a 180-degree flip on what he said about the debt ceiling. If you like it, that's great, but unless you share it, nobody else knows about it. If you see it on Twitter, please retweet it, and feel free to post it outside of Facebook and Twitter. Those are not the only two social media sites out there, and it doesn't even have to be social media. If you're, you know, shopping for Duck Dynasty stuff at Bass Pro Shops or Walmart, post it there. If you're reading a Daily Caller article or even a HuffPost or whatever, post it there too. It's important that this information get out there because the mainstream media, even the so-called conservative mainstream media, is not putting these things together. Fox News is shilling for a cave by the Republicans, and that's where most, quote, conservatives get their news. On the liberty side of the equation, most people go to the alternate media because they don't trust the corporatist media, which is a good idea. However, the alternate media is full of bullshit also, from whacked-out conspiracy theories to appropriated so-called alternate sites that are really just shills for the NWO, which you're fighting against. So don't fall for that crap either. Use your critical thinking skills. Go to reliable sources like Chris Green at Alternative Media Television, Josh Tolley. Go to Ben Swan. That's another good one. So there's a lot of really reliable sources. And, again, even the most reliable sources – use your critical thinking, cross-reference it, check it, and try to analyze it yourself. The most important thing to realize is that there is a shift in what's going on. There's a shift in people not falling for the media lie, but they don't necessarily know where to go. They know something's wrong. Get the information out to them. Get them to don'tfundit.com. Make sure that they call their representatives and tell them not to cave on this debt ceiling crap. Now, they're probably going to raise the debt ceiling anyway. That's more or less inevitable because the Fed's in charge of things, but at least the conservatives and the libertarians and the Republican Party should get something for raising the debt ceiling, whether it's some spending cuts, some structural reform, delay of Obamacare, something. They have to get something. But call them and hammer the crap out of them. The Capitol Hill switchboard number is 202-224-3121. You can get to your congressman and both your senators. And by all means, call the other assholes, too. You don't have to just call yours, but at least if you're a constituent, they tend to tally your vote and listen to you a little bit closer. Again, switchboard number is 202-224-3121. And don't forget to call the good guys. Call Rand Paul. Call Ted Cruz. Call Justin Amash. Call Gohmert. Call Woodall. Call ISA. Call them and tell them that you like what they're doing. They need to do more of it. These guys are under severe pressure. They need your help. The only reason that real conservatives, this so-called a small faction of one party that controls one house that's taken over and caused this shutdown. The only reason they can
the hostage
the hostage
party.
Yeah, that God. One. The legislative
arson. How many times did that guy say that?
Oh my goodness, it's ridiculous. But the only reason they can do anything, Chris, the only reason they can get anything done is because there's a tremendous pressure from the grassroots. Little Johnny Boehner is sounding like Mr. Conservative these days. He's not quite as powerful as Newt Gingrich, but he's coming across pretty good because of the pressure you put on him. You have to keep it up. Now is not the time to let up. We're getting to a tipping point. Now it's just a game of stamina. You need to give stamina to the real conservatives, and you need to put pressure on the squishes. That's your job. Yeah. That's what you have to do. If you want notifications in your Facebook profile about broadcast times, especially when we do last-minute spontaneous out-of-our-regular-time shows like this, make sure you go to the Tex and Rex Show page on Facebook. Like the page. You will get notifications in your news feed. Remember, our regular broadcast time is 10 p.m. Eastern Sunday nights, but apparently we're starting to fall into a new groove, which I really don't particularly like, and that's doing an extra show on Thursday. We don't have really time to do this. We don't get paid to do this. It costs us money. But when things move quickly, we got to get the information to you so you can get it out to everybody else and get them involved. Also, you can join Tex and Rex's Liberty Militia, where I put pictures of all the clips and articles we use from the show, which are also found in the comments section underneath the pic promoting the page. And also go to Coalition of Freedom. That's Chris's group. There's a lot of really good information there and a lot of good analysis of what's going on. Chris, this debt ceiling crap is just starting to slam up against what was originally the conversation, and I think everybody needs to remember that all this ultimately is about the Constitution and fiscal restraint, but the short-term tactic hasn't changed. it is still about delaying Obamacare. And I think people have started to forget that we're still trying to delay, since we can't defund, we're trying to delay. That's a compromise, by the way, folks. The Republicans did compromise. They didn't compromise on principle. They compromised on tactic, which means that now they're trying to delay Obamacare. What that means is the exchanges, these wonderful market exchanges that everybody is going to love more than ever after they found out what's in it, are still
$643 billion nightmare.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that money's already pissed down the drain. So the fact is they're here. If people love it so much, they can go there and sign up. All that the Republicans are saying at this point is don't fine people for not signing up. Sort of like walking into a store and looking around at all the, you know, 6 million different types of chewing gum that's available, which I find bizarre. I mean, when I was a kid, there was like Juicy Fruit, there was, you know, Double Mint, and there was Hubba Bubba. Now there's like 4 million kinds in the store when you go in there. And you look at them all and you decide, you know what, I really don't feel like having any gum. So you tell the guy up behind the counter, I've decided not to buy the gum. And he says, oh, okay, well, because you didn't buy the gum, here's a $2.73 tax bill. What? I didn't buy the gum. Right, because you didn't buy the gum, we're going to tax you. That's exactly what this is. If you don't buy the health insurance through the exchange, you're going to get taxed. So all we're saying at this point is
you're not just going to get taxed. They're going to have all your information. They're going to come and get you.
Yeah.
That means they have control. They can put liens on you, on your income, on your property, and you don't think they won't do it? These people are desperate to make this thing pay. Go ahead.
Yep. No, you're absolutely right. It's desperation, and they're Harry Reid and Barack Obama are so friggin' attached to this failed piece of legislation that doesn't solve the problem of people not having access to health care, doesn't lower costs, and actually destroys the health insurance medical insurance market. They're so married to it that they're willing to hold the whole country and, in fact, the world hostage in order to get this thing not only funded but implemented immediately, not on everybody, just on American individuals. They've already given an exemption to their union buddies, the government, the IRS agents who are enforcing it, and the big corporations. They're only trying to screw the little guy, okay? So all we're saying is, in fairness, just don't screw the little guy. If the little guy really wants this thing so badly, he can still go to the stupid exchanges. But if he doesn't, don't tax him. That's a reasonable position. It is one that would fully fund the remaining 17% of government that is currently not being your money's not being currently spent on, because 86% of it or something, or 85% of it more or less, is still running. And that way the government would be functioning normally. That whole scare will be over. And this whole debt ceiling meme, which we'll get to in the second hour, it's not a problem, okay? It's nothing to worry about, in the sense that it doesn't have to be raised for us to meet our obligations or have some fiscal restraint. But if they do raise it, which they likely will, you're going to have more debt. Now, short term, that's probably inevitable because we haven't stopped the spending. You have to stop the spending first. But if the Republicans don't push on the debt ceiling in order to get spending cuts, remember the sequestration, which was really kind of Obama's idea, only happened because of the last debt ceiling argument. So, you know, we'll get into that, but just don't forget that this is still about delaying Obamacare. Chris, why don't you throw your thoughts out there, and then we'll see if we'll get to some clips about what's happening out there.
Yeah, I'm currently staring at my header on my group, and that little picture of Chicken Little looking at the sky. And I just think about, I mean, we both, you and I, have in the last 3 or 4 hours have really crammed for this show, and that means reading articles, listening to clips, back and forth. Okay, what part do you want to play? Blah blah blah, and so I've really overloaded myself with this. But the thing that comes through, and a lot of it ties back to that last clip that we were trying to get pieces of for the show, Cruz on Crossfire, and listening to that liberal senator they had on there, and the hostage. He said it over and over and over and over again. And Cruz was smooth. And Van Jones starts the whole thing out saying, you know, do you want to apologize to your compatriots because you let them down into this ditch, you know, with the idea that they thought Obama. You know what I'm saying? And I'm just like going, and I'm listening to this crap. You know what I mean? And the whole scare tactic around the debt ceiling and default around the world and the fear-mongering. And if people who, you know, and you don't have to be into politics to really get this, but they say the same damn thing every time we get into a discussion of fiscal responsibility, budgets, unsustainable programs, solving the internal core issues of this country, whatever it may be around money and responsibility of government or a government out of control or too big, it's always the exact same technique. The only thing is the difference between the left and the right, not that the right is always right, but you know what I'm saying, but the difference between the liberals and the, or the Democrats and the Republicans, however you want to, you know, segue that out, is that they have much more facilities, you know, many more programs, shows, news shows, you know, newspapers, articles, so they can get a whole bunch of different people with all their different personalities saying the exact same lie. I mean lie over and over and over again, and that's what people hear unless they have learned how to get good information outside of mainstream media. And we talk about this a lot, and this is so important because if you listen to everything you and I just went through and you didn't know what we know, it could be overwhelming and it could sway your mind or instill that fear that they want to instill into you to make you think it was the Republicans who did it, the Republicans who aren't willing to negotiate, the Republicans who aren't, you know, who are putting our country at risk, which nobody, there's nothing at risk. And Rand Paul, you probably have that clip, I hope, you know, and he breaks it down. And anybody who understands economics knows that it's only 8 or 9% of our monthly intake of tax revenues in this country go to the service the debt. It's a joke. The whole thing is an insane nightmare. And these leftists live on a lie. And that's what's so astonishing about this whole concept. And it works. And it's worked for 30, 40, 50 years in this country. And I think people are finally starting to realize that it's just it's a game. And yeah, I'm not making any excuses for Republicans, okay, because I won't, because as I could go into a whole conversation about all the mistakes they've made, you know, since they became the party of big government too, also, you know, and their part in the debt and everything else. But when you look at this thing and the way the information's flying, you have to remember who you are, what the Constitution is, what sound money is, and what the hell is going on. They have done, the reason the sequester worked is, and they still raise the damn debt ceiling, you know, which I don't agree with, but they got the sequester through, which was a reduction in growth of government, not a reduction in expenditures. And when you look at the amount of money that Obama has spent, or the Obama administration and his government has spent a year compared to Bush, which was outrageous, you know what I mean, or any other time in history, I mean, we're going on $3.6 plus trillion a year. They're throwing away $1.5 trillion a year more than we did just a couple years ago. And they won't negotiate on that. They won't rein in spending. They won't hold government accountable. I mean, we see stuff come out every flipping day, Rex. Every day we see waste, abuse, and fraud stuff being exposed. Never makes it to mainstream media, never gets discussed at the national level on priorities. And it's huge in this country. It's got to be 25-30%, you know. And when you look at that, all these discussions we have around finances and issues, I mean, we're sitting here attacking a part of a party, a portion of a party, saying that it's, you know, putting the country at risk and all this crap while they're closing down open-air parks, locking tourists up. I mean, some of the crap that I've read is just, are you kidding me? Kicking an old couple out of their home, out of their vacation home because it's on government property, you know, on Lake Mead. I mean, all these stories. And then you you're moving through the data, and along comes an article that says, guess what? While all this fear mongering, freaking out is going on, all the money we give to all these despot countries around the world, that's unaffected.
Yeah, there's a lot of unaffected. But look, 85% of government is still running, and it's still pissing away your money. And let's face it, most of it is outside of the enumerated powers, and most of it's useless. The one thing that I'll agree with you, but I want to accent it: there are Republicans, and there are Republicans. You know, I don't think that you can really consider Jihad Jane McHammed, Republican Arizona, and Lindsay Lightner's loafers, Gramnesty, Republican South Carolina, and Corker and all those other losers as being in the same milieu as Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, Justin Amash, Trey Gowdy, Louis Gohmert, Woodall. You know, it's not the same. Now, what they're saying is that there's a civil war inside the Republican Party. Well, I don't think that there is. It's simply that finally the people, you, Mr. and Mrs. Grassroots, have started electing people who are actually Republicans based on the platform, the Constitution, conservatism, and they are now ousting the neocon leftist rhino infiltrators. That's what you're seeing. You're seeing a purging of the rhinos who are still the majority. And that has to continue, and the only way it continues is if you keep pushing. You keep pushing, you keep calling, you keep signing petitions, you keep going to Tea Party rallies, you keep going to Liberty Party, you know, Liberty Groups, Campaign for Liberty, you go to, you know, all the events that you can, you get more information, you get more people involved, you make it louder, you make it bigger so that it can be heard. And so the fact that they're saying that this small faction of legislative arsonists, this Tea Party faction, this small faction is holding everybody hostage, well... Yeah, well, these hostage takers are a small faction within the minority party in one – well, the majority party in the House, but the minority party overall in one chamber of the bicameral Congress. Well, the reason they're able to do this is because of you and the pressure you've put on the others, and because it's the power the Constitution gives to the minority in order to slow down the speed at which government operates so that it doesn't do what is actually happening and has been going on for damn near 100 years. This is how the process works, and in their genius, the Founding Fathers gave us a process that allows these checks and balances. This is the system. And people talk about, if you don't like it, change the system. Well, you can change the system. That's what Article 5 is about. But frankly, why would you want to change the system? The only time you want to change the system is when you're not getting your way and you're the party, quote, in power. But as soon as it flips and the other party's in power, suddenly you don't want it. The idea is, instead of giving more power to government and just hoping it's your assholes that are in charge, how about not giving government more power so that no asshole is in charge? That's a brilliant idea. I think that's one left and right can agree on, right?
Yeah, and I was just thinking that, and this is a challenge, very few people will take it, but if you go back when Bush had full control of the House and the Senate in that first spree, and they were making all these decisions and pushing all this stuff through, and the Democrats were the minority. Go back to C-SPAN and look at some of those hearings and listen to those Democrats whining about the power and how little they had to fight, you know, the decisions they didn't agree with. And you will find that, you know, while they sit here right now and they're bitching and moaning and trying to turn Ted Cruz into, you know, public enemy number one and trying to rally the rhinos against them and all this crap that's going on, they're whining and moaning because they have a legitimate process by which to hold the majority party accountable, not hostage, accountable.
Yeah.
And that's
exactly
the thing. Every time these I got to watch my tongue. Every time these people say hostage, just put accountable in there. Because that's what these people are doing. Most people don't want Obamacare. Most people are just now figuring out how bad Obamacare is because they don't pay the hell attention, you know, to one of the biggest, most intrusive laws that has come across our desk in a long time. And nobody paid attention. Well, now it's starting to get implemented, and people are finally starting to frickin' pay attention. You know, I mean, anything that is 2,000 pages long, 2,700 pages long, plus gives the department the ability to write future laws. Every American yep. should pay attention whether you're political or not. It just blows me away how few people, you know, even take the time to educate themselves on things that an out-of-control, unconstitutional federal government is doing that will impact every aspect of your life, from your finances to your taxes
yep.
to your health to potentially even how long you live. That's
exactly.
worth paying attention to. My God, people.
It is.
Sometimes
Chris,
it is so. I am not a political person. I hate politics. But I have watched the freedoms and my ability to perform, make money, keep the money I make. You know what I mean? All those things that are American over the last 10, 15 years, 20 years, go right down the frickin' pot because of both parties. You know,
yep.
All of a sudden I got up one day and I said, you know what? I better frickin' pay attention here. And I've always tried
yeah,
to pay attention
has.
To big, you know, to big things. But this Obamacare thing, it was never passed. You know, they talk about it as if, you know, it's a law of the land. It was never passed by both sides of the aisle. Not one Republican voted for it. And they have fought and fought and fought and fought. And maybe instead of going, well, Republicans are a bunch of sourpusses, blah, 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 and get up and go, why are they fighting the damn thing so hard?
Because we don't want it.
You know, I mean,
no
kidding. It's dangerous. It's going to change the fabric of our country. We may never recover from this. I don't know what it would take if this thing gets fully implemented.
No, you're absolutely right, and people need to be aware. It's not a matter of whether you like politics or not. It's the fact that politics has its hand in your pocket. It has its hand in your doctor's pocket. It has its hand on
your
script pad.
In your life.
It has its hand, and it's going to soon have its hand up your ass or on your breasts, which, by the way, it does if you go to the airport right now.
Yeah, I was
going to
say.
So, you know,
this
now it's
an
we'll take,
extension of TSA.
Yeah, it's the Obamacare is the TSA writ large, you know, free prostate exams
oh
and mammograms.
My God,
you
people.
Know, but the crazy thing is that the Democrats, whether they're in power or not power, they're little girls, they're golems, they're zombies, and they're always whining and bitching. Now, the funny thing is that they forced this thing through despite massive opposition, and you had people that have never picked up a picket sign or gone to a protest surround the Capitol in March when they were forcing this thing through, protesting it. The Republicans maligned Newt Gingrich during the election for saying that right-wing social engineering is as bad as left-wing social engineering. The government shouldn't be doing any social engineering. And yet they pushed this through without a single Republican vote. Now that the Republicans have the legislative tools given to them by the parliamentary procedures and the Constitution, they're whining and bitching that they need to delay and argue this some other time. Why the hell do we need to argue it some other time? You're trying to bring it online right now, which you really can't do because it's friggin' failing all over the place, but you're trying to bring it online right now for a small fraction of the population, basically individuals who have the least political power, but not the big corporations, not the government unions, and not the other labor unions. So, you know, and the big corporations. So it's a bunch of crap, and it's not so much only about delaying this thing, which would be fair and the smart thing to do, and frankly, it would actually help Obama out because this thing's going to collapse around his ears. But the, you know, they say, well, if you think it's going to fail, why don't you just let it fail and then you know show how bad it is? Well, because if this thing fails, it'll take out most people's jobs, it'll take out the economy, and you know what? So we're going to get the satisfaction of saying, see, we told you so. After like the United States is in complete shambles, no, thank you. How about we just stop it, slow it down, think a little bit, and that's really the point. Now you mentioned Ted Cruz on Crossfire. On CNN with Newt Gingrich and that communist bald-headed guy, it's 24 minutes, you know, without the commercials. The YouTube clip is on the Texan Rex show page. So if you go to today's show and click on the picture, it's got Obama a la Two Face showing his 2006 how it's unpatriotic to raise the debt ceiling, and his 2013 if you don't raise the debt ceiling, the world's going to collapse. If you click on that picture, you go to the comments. In the comments section, the clip is there. Or go to Texan Rex's Liberty Militia. It's right there in Texan Rex's Liberty Militia or even Coalition of Freedom. You can listen to the whole thing. I couldn't get all of it up there, but we clipped a couple of minutes. Here's about 5 minutes from kind of the middle of the interview with Van Jones and the other liberal Democrat attacking Ted for standing up. Now, keep in mind, in Washington, D.C., the person who's always being attacked by the establishment, which includes the prostitutes and the repeaters, both on the left and the right, the establishment politicians who are just, you know, part of the furniture in Washington, D.C., and also whoever might be the current, you know, douchebag in charge, once they're all on the same page attacking one person or one group of people, that probably means that those people are doing something that you want them to do, and the establishment is panicking over it. And remember something, although the Tea Party faction of hostage takers might be a small segment of the Republican Party, it is a huge swath of America. Maybe not in New York City and Chicago and Los Angeles, but the rest of the country, we are the majority. Even if someone has never been to a Tea Party meeting or a Tea Party website or a Campaign for Liberty website, most Americans think in those terms. And a lot of people who might not think in those terms when they're pressed actually do, because most Americans are conservative and libertarian, and the trend is moving in that direction. So when they attack this small faction of jihadi terrorist hostage takers, as they've called them, legislative arsonists, who they're really attacking is you. They're pissing on you, they're denigrating you, they're condescending to you, and you'd better tell them that you don't appreciate it, tell them that you vote in 2014, that you're active and you get other people involved, you're going to hold them to account no matter what friggin' party they're in, and that they better not screw up and they better not cave. So call the pricks and tell them that, and call the good guys too. The switchboard number is 202-224-3121, and keep in mind that the only way that these guys can stand up is if you keep the pressure on. So keep the pressure on. Here's Ted Cruz on Crossfire.
One minor point. This is the 18th time since 1976 that the Congress and the President have been at an impasse, and we've shut the government down. This is not like this is a brand new, suddenly discovered thing. We've done this 18 times. This
and
is
it's
the 18th
been rotten
time.
Every time.
Well, but as often is the only way that the Congress can get the president's attention. These don't happen by accident.
You have the president's attention. My gosh, he is extraordinarily concerned about the harm that the shutdown is causing to people across this country right now, and he's extraordinarily concerned about the threat to our currency and our credit.
Not enough to negotiate.
Negotiate or negotiate with hostages. There's an important distinction that everybody
understands.
We've done
this 17 other times.
So let's move on. I think we've heard this before. I think we understand where you guys are coming from. But there's some stuff that's are new developments. One of the new developments is you talk about what's popular, what's not popular. One thing that's incredibly unpopular right now is the Republican Party under your leadership. You came to this town within a year. You've become the most prominent Republican in this town, and we now have polling data that shows Republican Party less popular than it's ever been in the history of the party, which is shocking. I wonder if you now, and this is, you know, we're all friends here. We can talk. Do you feel like you owe your party an apology? You had people who believed in you. They believe that you were going to somehow be able to defund Obamacare. They believe that this strategy of shutdown might have a chance. They followed you into a ditch, and now there's obviously no chance that Obamacare is going to be defunded, and we're on the brink of a horrific default. Do you think that in the reflection of your own heart, you might say, you know what, I'm a new kid here, I think I owe you guys an apology?
You know, Van, I know you desperately want to change the topic from Obamacare, and it is striking. Hold on, let me answer your question.
From the default?
Let me answer your question. Listen, Democrats in this town do not want to discuss Obamacare. Why? Because it isn't working. We saw this week President Obama's approval ratings are at 37%, the lowest it has ever been. The Wall Street Journal poll just came out, and Democrats have the lowest support among the middle class they've had in 40 years of polling. Why is it? And it's for two reasons. Number one, because House Republicans are working to fund vital government priorities. They passed 14 bills to do it, and President Obama and the Democrats refused to negotiate. And number two, it is because House Republicans are listening to the millions of Americans who are losing their jobs, who are being pushed into part-time work, who are facing skyrocketing health insurance.
Do you agree with this? Is this your analysis, Mr. Senator White?
The notion that Obamacare is a failure, I think, is a product of right-wing histrionics. I went into our insurance exchange in Rhode Island when I was home over the weekend. There was a family at the front desk. They had been in earlier to get waited on and to get served, and they were so happy with the way they were treated that they were now coming back. They brought in two big tubs of Dunkin' Donuts coffee and stacks of donuts for everybody. The report from Christy Ferguson, who's running it, is that people are hugging their employees when they find out what the options are. The idea that CMS, that's a pretty anecdotal story, CMS has adjusted the long-term 2010 to 2020 costs for Medicare and Medicaid down by $1.2 trillion from the 2010 estimates to 2013. You got to believe that Obamacare has something to do with those huge savings. The Republican Party decided that Obamacare was going to be a failure early on, before Obamacare was even decided. It was a political choice to pull all support for anything that this president wanted to do. Now they have to live with it, so they have to maintain that storyline. But I have to tell you, Senator Cruz, I don't see it at home. I don't believe it. And I think if you know anybody who had a child, say, with a pre-existing condition, who was trapped in their job for the rest of their lives because they could never move because no other insurer would ever cover for them, or the child who got out of, went beyond the cap, and the parents had to sell their house in order to pay for the continued cancer treatment because they'd blown through the cap, those are situations that needed attention, and Obamacare has fixed them.
Well, and let me respond to that with two things. Number one, it's interesting that you apparently found a family in Rhode Island that went on the exchanges and got insurance.
1,300.
It was publicly reported there were 580 in Rhode Island. In Iowa, it was reported there were five in the entire state. So enrollment has been
going like.
But let me make a second point, which is you said criticism of Obamacare is, quote, right-wing histrionics.
Yes.
And I'm curious if you think it was right-wing histrionics when James Hoffa, the president of the Teamsters, said that Obamacare is destroying the health care of millions of hardworking men and women in this country.
I have heard that Mr. Hoffa has said that you're using that quote is inappropriate and out of context.
Okay. Hold on. The nice thing about Crossfire, okay. We can have some back and forth. We're going to come back to this. We have to take a break.
But don't.
Out of context? Well, if it's out of context what Jimmy Hoffa said that Ted Cruz quotes, then why
there's
did Jimmy
a letter
Hoffa
online you can read
and
the
why
damn
did,
thing.
So why did Jimmy Hoffa and the unions ask for an exemption from Obamacare
my
if
God.
It's so freaking good? And again, the argument is bullshit because the simple fact is that the Republicans have gone from trying to defund something, which is a negotiation. That's what they want. That's what we want. We want repeal. So we went from repeal to defunding, and now we're simply at delay. That's a compromise. It's a reasonable compromise, and the Democrats are, we won't negotiate. We have to have Obamacare. Well, if it's so good, you know, that people love it and they're going to buy you Dunkin' Donuts and hug you and all this bullshit that the guy was spewing, okay, that, then why do you have to fine people for not getting into it? If it's so good, people will want it. This is how products work. If if the Apple iPhone sucked, right, then millions of people wouldn't have bought it, and Apple would have failed, okay? So people buy things that work. So if these exchanges are so friggin' good, people will go there and get into it. But the other thing, you know, this whole meme about, you know, it's already brought costs down. No, it hasn't. It costs $2.2 trillion over the next 10 years. And only in Washington, D.C. are costs brought down if they don't increase by the projected increase. You know, that's like I walk into a Ferrari dealership and I take a look at the Testarossa and they say, you know, how much is this thing? It's $350,000. Oh, well, that's interesting. I like it. I need a new car, but I think I'm going to go down to the Ford dealership and pick up a, you know, $50,000 F-150. And then I'm going to save $300,000. Where's the $300,000? I didn't have $350,000 to buy the Ferrari in the first place, but now that I didn't buy the Ferrari and I bought the Ford instead, I saved $300,000. That's the kind of math that they do in Washington. It's crap. Don't fall for it. This thing is expensive. Go.
Yes. Yes, and yes, and all that, and more. Yeah, it's insane. They lie continually, and they evade the hard facts. Every time, if you listen to this whole clip or anything else where Cruz has been involved, because he can answer questions, same with Rand, you know, he can answer the questions, and they're very calm, they're very precise. As soon as they start to answer the question and debunk it, they interrupt him. Every freaking time and try to jump around and throw out, you know, some more hostage-taking fear, we're going to default, the world's going to crash, the sky is falling. And because, you know, the bottom line is, and you nailed it, if this thing was so good for all these people, first of all, I'd like to see that person. I'd like to actually have an opportunity to interview them because if indeed he's telling the truth about that one person in Rhode Island, that would be the one positive story I've heard so far. Now, this is not, you know, here's the other thing they will not do. They won't bring in all the people who are getting signing up for Obamacare, who are low income and people who are already on Medicaid and Medicare, because those people will cost the system money, because they're going to get subsidies. Thank you.
Which means taxes out of your pocket into theirs to lower their premium.
Oh, I only pay $100 a month. Well, how much was your bill? How much is somebody who has a regular income and isn't a drain on society paying? Oh, theirs is $500-$600 a month. In other words, that's the person, you know, the middle class who the left continually says that they're for. Okay, they're not. Those are the people going to get hit the hardest. And all the stories, we could do a whole show just on stories of people going, I signed up, and oh, my God, this is what happened. You know, we've seen this stuff. They don't want to talk about the facts. The facts,
facts are a problem.
Hurting people. Yeah, it's hurting people. And well, let's not even talk about right now. Let's just talk about the last 3 years in our economy. The lack of confidence in the market, business is not growing, 70% of all the new jobs are part-time because nobody wants to hire a full-time employee, people are cutting people, you know, like the whole FedEx story, cutting spouses. I mean, the facts are overwhelming that this is
destroying our economy. Just right-wing histrionics, Chris. It's just right-wing histrionics. We're making
I love that word. I have no idea where he got that, but that was pretty creative. At least it was a cool word compared to hostage 50 times in the whole damn interview.
Yeah, histrionics is a cool word. Well, here's the histrionics. The histrionics is that these people are playing right out of the Alinsky playbook. You tell a lie big enough, you repeat it often enough, and you denigrate the other side, people may eventually believe it. Well, they tried to do that with, taking away your Second Amendment rights. You fought back. That didn't work. They tried it again with Syria to blow up the world and start World War III. That didn't work. And it's not going to work this time if you keep up the pressure. The amazing thing to me is this whole meme is about providing – you know, protection for the poor, the downtrodden, the uninsured. Well, that's a bunch of bullshit.
We already have that. But
government can't really do that, okay? Now, I'm not saying government doesn't have a role. I'm not an anarchist or a minarchist, so all you anarchists and minarchists out there, you know, I apologize, but, you know, I'm a statist, okay? I think that we have a good government in the Constitution. What we have is a criminal element that is ruining our good government. Okay, and government does have a role, but government's role is strictly within the enumerated powers, and none of the enumerated powers give the federal government any purview over social safety nets, insurance, health care, anything like that, not even food stamps, none of it. It is not given to the federal government as an enumerated power. Now, here's the thing. Does government have a role in that? Sure it does, and states can and probably in some cases should do those things. But the federal government only has specific responsibilities, national defense, border security, all the things that they don't do well, that's their responsibility. And everything they're trying to do, which they screw up even worse, that's what they don't have responsibility or power to do. So it's all backwards, and you've got to fix it, and that's what Ted Cruz is talking about. So but the thing that's amazing to me is, yeah, government probably has a role, but government's role should only be when the mediating institutions and private resources cannot satisfy those needs. Used to be that the doctor, right, was the richest guy in town. Why? Because everybody needs a doctor at some point. So the middle class and the wealthy would go and they would pay the regular freight market price for his services, and then out of his excess profits, the doctor would take care of the poor in town for a lower price, a nominal fee, and in some cases just outright philanthropy. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It can work the same way on a large scale. If it happens to fail, if the free market, as they say, can't provide these things, well, that's when the state can step in. But you don't go right to the top. You don't go to Washington, D.C. You take care of it in your county. You take care of it at your state level. And that way you've got at least 50 different competing governments trying to find better solutions. And the idea is that Obamacare is nothing more than Romney Care writ large. Well, Romney Care failed in Massachusetts. Oh, no, it didn't, Rex. It's doing well. Yeah, only because the federal government subsidized it. Who's going to subsidize the federal government? Okay, so that's the problem with it. Now, if this is such a great friggin' idea, then implement it in New York and Massachusetts and Vermont and California and all the other retarded liberal states. And don't implement it in the ones that don't want to implement it, and let's see what shakes out. Okay, that would be a good idea. So and then the other meme that...
Well, they know it won't shake out. That's the problem, Rex. They know it won't survive. That's why they're trying to push it through at the federal level, because it does not work. Socialism does not work. Nor does giving people something for nothing and making people and the next generation, more dependent on the system. That doesn't work either. The problem is, there are people who devise their whole power system off of this philosophy. And my favorite statement is, socialism is a great idea until you run out of other people's money. Well, guess what?
Yeah.
We've run out of other people's money. And all they're
doing
is
printing
and borrowing.
That's why we have to raise the debt
ceiling. And they're printing and borrowing and printing and borrowing. And that's why, and here's the other issue. That's why we have a thing called BRICS right now going on in the world. That's in, you know, mm-hmm. people need to educate themselves. Countries around the world who have relied on or been subservient to the U.S. trade dollar, the U.S. petrodollar, are moving away from it. And it's one of the last things we have. And it's a very big chunk of all of our printed fake money. Is what flows around the world that people use as a trade dollar. Well, when you get, you know, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South America, and a few more countries finally get sick of our corrupt politicians and lazy people who always have their hand out and keep voting for people who give them more, one of these days you're going to wake up and there's going to be about $2, $3 trillion of our trade dollar is going to be dumped back into the U.S. market, and it's going to crash our system because they're sick of us. And anybody who studies international economics knows this is, it is not a conspiracy theory. All the data is out there. They just got through with another huge deal, Russia and China and their petrol, and BRICS just created a bond exchange, $100 billion bond exchange program, and I guarantee you it's going to keep growing and growing and growing.
Yeah, and just to clarify, BRICS is Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa and other emerging economies that are trying to move away from the dollar, not because they dislike the United States, not because they don't want to operate in our markets. They dislike the Federal Reserve note, which is a private note that has been issued to destroy our country, and it's ruining our economy, and we're exporting that inflation, and they are sick of it. And at some point, that inflation is going to come back, and it's going to smack you in the face, and it is the principal reason that your medical costs and insurance premiums have gone up. It isn't any of this other crap that they keep telling you. The principal reason that your medical costs and your insurance premiums have gone up, other than obviously Obamacare adding on to it, the reason costs went up in the first place for them to have the impetus to put Obamacare in place is the Federal Reserve. Now, the other thing that's crazy is that these countries would be our partners in trade, maybe not necessarily our friends overall, but our partners in trade, if we had a stable currency and operated as a fair actor. And the other thing is that, you know, this whole meme that poor people, you know, need the government to help them out, well, that's a condescending, you know, patronizing attitude that socialists and to social engineers always have. The simple fact is that for the most part, unless you agitate them to get them all pissed off at wealthy people, I'm not talking about large transnational mega corporations or transnational bankers and financiers. I'm talking about just the regular, you know, wealthy Americans who make more than $250,000, poor income people don't hate them. Okay, I don't think that you will find a tradesman who does, you know, hangs sheetrock or frames a house or lays brick, pissed off that somebody built a $1.5 million house. So they're happy that the rich guy built a $1.5 million house because he hired them to lay brick and to lay pipe and to frame the house and to hang the sheetrock. Okay, you know, nobody's really pissed off, you know, like the guys who work on boats. They're not pissed off when a wealthy guy buys a $300,000 boat. They're happy because they get to work on building that boat. That's a good-paying job. So it's pretty simple. wealthy people, and I'm talking about real wealthy people, don't pay taxes. They find ways around it, and so basically it trickles down, and the rest of us end up paying taxes. But wealthy people who have money to spend, they don't sit on it and roll around in it naked in their bed. They usually spend it or invest it, which has its way of funneling back into the economy so that the rest of us can't enjoy it. So that's how you get yourself out of this hole. You don't dig a deeper hole by raising the debt ceiling. You fill the hole in by generating wealth. And the way you generate wealth is to lay off the free market economy. Obamacare is going to shut down the free market economy and jobs for people of lower income and middle class. Now, believe it or not, we've already hit an hour into the live show.
My gosh.
We're supposed to be talking about debt ceiling, but we got to get this Obamacare crap out of the way. We're not going to get to all the clips that Chris and I have been working on all day. But,
you got the rain.
We're going to get to that in a second. But first, I just have to play this because it's friggin' hilarious and reveals the lie. Department of Health and Human Services, Orwellian friggin' name for that, Secretary Catherine Sebelius, was on with John Stewart, and this is what the left does now. They want to get the young people, so they go to where the young people get their news. Hey, young people, John Stewart's a fucking comedian. Stop going to him to get news. He's a comedian. If you want news, go to some real news sources. But nevertheless, this interview is very revealing. Again, it's on the Tex and Rex show page and in Tex and Rex Liberty Militia. It's also on Coalition of Freedom. But here's about 3 minutes of – it's about a 10-minute interview. Some real choice parts where Stewart almost presses her on some of the failures of her Obama's signature legislation. But then again, you know, he's a lefty, so he agitates for a single-payer system, which, by the way, folks, if you have any question about this, this is what this is all about. All this Obamacare, show Obamacare, blah, blah, blah crap, it's about causing the system to fail in order to put a single-payer system in, because as Vladimir Ilyich Lenin, one of the founders of Soviet communism, said, that controlling people's medical care and access to their physician is the linchpin of the socialist state. Here's Catherine Sebelius with John Stewart, the comedian.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
We're going to do a challenge. I'm going to try and download every movie ever made. And you're going to try and sign up for Obamacare, and we'll see which happens first.
Okay.
What's going on with this? Is this working? Is this not working?
Well, the great news is we have a terrific market. And for the first time, people are going to have a chance to compare plans, figure out what they qualify for. Insurance companies have to play by new rules. And for about 85% of us, we don't have to sign up for anything because we have insurance that works.
I see. So this Obamacare is for the 15%ers.
For the 15% who,
as it were,
have no insurance at all.
I see.
Or
how many have signed up thus far?
Fully enrolled? I can't tell you because I don't know. We are taking applications on the web, on the phone. We'll be giving monthly reports. But I can tell you we've had not only lots of web hits, hundreds of thousands of accounts created. We have
hundreds of thousands of people have signed up.
Of accounts created, which means that then they're going to go shopping. John, this is like
what?
A kayak site where you might check out what plane you want to get on. The good news is you don't have to buy it today. You have to have insurance by the 15th of December to have a plan that starts in January.
These are individuals. Now, why is it? I think a very legitimate criticism of this is that businesses were given a delay of a year, but that individuals were not given that option. Why is that?
Well, business owners who have more than 50 employees, and that's the only business owners who have any responsibility, 95% of them are in the market right now. So a delay doesn't change the market numbers. Individuals have tax credits coming their way, have financial help for the first time, and the market that we are now running is available for them. So that didn't delay, that didn't stop. We've got plans that we know about 6 out of 10 people will get a policy for under $100 a month.
Right.
Never happened before. Insurance companies can't turn anybody away with a pre-existing condition.
But if I'm an individual, I'm wondering, well, an individual who doesn't want this, because there are individuals clearly that want this, but if I'm an individual that doesn't want it, it would be hard for me to look at a big business getting a waiver and not having to do it and me having to, because I would think, well, geez, it looks like because I don't have a lobbying group, not that I don't have a lobbying group, believe me, I have a lobbying group. But I would feel like you were favoring big business because they lobbied you to delay it because they didn't want to do it this year, but you're not allowing individuals that same courtesy.
Well, again, big businesses are already in the health market. That's where most people get.
But 85% of people are, yes?
That's where 85% of the people get their insurance right now.
Right.
They work for a government. They work for a big business. They work. Those employers are in.
Right.
Small employers have no mandate at all in the law, not now, not in the future.
Underneath 50 employees.
Under 50 employees. So the new market gives them some additional shopping tools. We have a small business market, and
right.
we have for...
Although right now that only has the one option.
No, it has... business owners will be able to make choices. What doesn't
right.
happen this year is then employees in a small mom-and-pop shop can't choose from 14 different plans. That'll
right.
happen next year.
They get one.
But it is...
What she meant to say there is, but it is all bullshit because we intend to have a single-payer system when this thing crashes.
Can somebody tell me, show me one legitimate person who got a $100 plan that wasn't government subsidized?
Well,
that ain't what I'm seeing.
Well, yeah, I mean,
that's
the whole point is the subsidies are based on having income that is within 400% of the poverty level, which means that, you know, up to $100,000 of income, which in some places is not very poor, and in other places it is. But that's besides the point. The only way insurance companies can comply with the mandates of the exchanges and bring these low-cost plans in is by limiting the network of doctors. So you might get a $100 plan with or without a subsidy, but your choice, your physician, your hospital might not be in that network. So you're going to have to switch hospitals and switch your physicians. Not only that, but because the lower price plans are the most attractive, and who's the first to sign up for these things, assuming they can actually sign up on the, quote, Kayak-type website? When was the last time Kayak went down for 3 or 4 days? Besides the point, assuming they can buy it and they get into it, who's shopping for this stuff right now? You think that it's the young 20 and 30-year-olds who don't really go to the doctor or the hospital very often? Hell no. Okay, who's buying this right now? People that are already sick, who are expensive. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't take care of ill people. I'm just giving you the facts. And people who already have lost their health insurance either because of Obamacare itself or because they got laid off or they got their hours cut and got booted off their employer plan. So basically the people shopping for this thing are looking for price or they're very expensive. Well, if you're looking for price and you're already sick and you get into one of these lower cost plans because that's all you can afford even with a subsidy – you're going to have to go to a hospital that's 30 miles away from you, or you're going to have to wait for your physician. So if you have a chronic condition and you're seeing your doctor on a regular basis, all of a sudden you find that there's long waits because these physicians can't keep up with it. Look at what has already happened since Medicare was put in place, since Medicaid was put in place, and since the HMOs came online in the 80s. You get to spend less than 10 minutes with your physician. And usually you have to wait 30 minutes after the appointment time to go see him. That's going to get worse, and it's going to get compounded. Moreover, people can't figure out the friggin' law, so they don't even know how to comply with it in some cases. So it's a bunch of crap. And her, you know, saying that people get to go online and then they get to go shopping. Shopping?
No,
on a government website? That's insane. You know, you go shopping by having more choices, not less. And why do you want to give people a tax subsidy? Here's a simple thing. Why don't you make all medical costs, health costs and insurance premiums not taxable? There's a thought. Then people can just keep that money instead of sending it to the IRS, and instead of having the compliance burden and the cost of enforcing this debacle, people can just go buy health insurance or medical insurance or whatever the hell they want to buy. Novel concept.
Well, and here's a little history lesson on why we are at the point we're at. And if people, you know, do the research, go back and look at Medicaid, Medicare, and all this kind of stuff, and they look at how that's impacted the medical industry. And if you talk to doctors, your doctors, and you get them in an honest conversation, they'll explain to you how devastating that's been on their costs, and then and how that has forced regular health care, you know, going through insurance and whatever else, to skyrocket, because when you pay pennies on the dollar for healthcare through these government subsidized programs, it forces the free market to have to make up those losses somewhere else. And it all starts back then. It all starts with this this touchy-feely government program, which is kind of interesting too, because you pay for it like an insurance.
Are you talking about the TSA?
Yeah.
You said touchy-feely government program.
Yeah, they're all very similar, aren't they? They're all going to leave you groping for air. But when you look at these programs, I mean, because you pay it in your a tax. Essentially, you pay a fee out of your paycheck for this program, and then they pay the doctor 10 cents on the dollar, or whatever the case may be, and it's getting worse. That market, that free market, has never had a chance to recover from that. And they use that as an excuse, the cost of medical care and insurance, as a reason to implement more failed government programs. And in fact, one on steroids or hyper super steroids. And so anybody who can sit back and think this thing through with a little historical Republican, what did he call it? That was a funny word. With a little historical perspective knows that they're lying their ass off. That's really what it boils down to. If you want to fix the system, you open up the market across all markets, all states. You give people a tax break, and you pay a fair dollar for government health care systems like Medicaid, Medicare, those types of programs. I mean, in Washington State, where I'm at, because I have a handicapped son, the numbers of doctors who are walking away from Medicaid and Medicare patients is huge.
They can't afford it.
Huge.
Yeah,
they can't afford it anymore, especially with the implementation of Obamacare, all these new regulations, all these new compliance costs, and the unknowns.
Yep.
And here's the thing that other people don't understand, and nobody – it never really got discussed on the national level, but these states that signed up for the government-mandated exchanges, the ones that did, because half of them didn't, or whatever the number is, didn't do it because they knew that big chunk of Medicare money they were going to get was going to go away in a couple of years, and then they would be stuck paying all those fees themselves. And you see,
that's
in this same old thing. The government bribes you, and then it leaves you hanging as a state or as an individual. This history of this kind of abuse is in every federal program there is, and it
which is why we shouldn't send the money to the Fed.
This one's in. Yeah, well, and it also blows me away why people think this one's going to be different, because they talk about those 10 million plus people who don't have insurance and are now going to have insurance. We're going to destroy our whole economy. To solve that problem this way, anybody knows anything about the government knows that's bullshit.
Right, that's a canard. See, what they're doing is they're tugging on our heartstrings, and the fact is that we should take care of those people who truly can't afford and truly can't qualify for medical insurance. And it is incumbent on us morally as a society. Well, we do. Some of them suck. Most of them are government programs. But the idea is that we do have a moral obligation to take care of those people, but that doesn't mean that you hold the gun to somebody else's head and make them take care of it. And that's not what this is about. They're just tugging at your heartstrings in order to crash the system so that they can fix it their way. That's what the social engineering is all about. And frankly, look, Obamacare just sucks, period. We've done more than four shows on it. Just go to the Tex and Rex show page on Blog Talk Radio and listen to it. It's been an hour and 15 minutes now, and we want to talk about the debt ceiling, so I'm done talking about Obamacare. I'm sick of it. It sucks. Just understand that. We're going to transition away from it by playing one clip that references Obamacare but then also talks about the debt. This is Wolf Blitzer on CNN.
Right now, well into a week into this new program.
A week into it, Wolf, still a lot of glitches. People not able to create accounts just to get information to possibly enroll, much less not being able to enroll actually in the plan. A week in, still a lot of problems. I was just with a database company owner named Luke Chung. He's out of Vienna, Virginia. He has tried to enroll in this since the rollout on October 1st. He, as a database company owner, he knows this stuff. He says it really is just poorly designed. It's just not user-friendly. He's still not been able to enroll, much less navigate and get information. Just when I was with him, he got an error message on his computer saying that he couldn't really go any further. He went into a chat room trying to get information and was told that there are others kind of in line ahead of him. Even just trying to chat with someone there on the website, people are having problems. But what we're also hearing now, Wolf, is that the administration was warned about these potential problems months in advance. We spoke to Robert Leshefsky. He is a healthcare consultant who has clients who are insurers. He says his insurers who dealt with the administration in the months ahead of time, he says the insurers that he dealt with had contentious meetings with people at HHS and other healthcare officials who were in charge of this. Contentious meetings in the months beforehand, before this rollout, warning them, this isn't working, it's not going to be smooth, don't do it right then. He says those warnings were ignored. They went full speed ahead and said, we'll work these problems out. Now, there's been a bit of pushback from the White House. We'll hope to get more later from them. We are running this by them.
Yeah, but if they had 3 years to get this ready, if they weren't fully ready, they should accept the advice that a lot of Republicans are giving them. Delay it another year, get it ready, and make sure it works. Look, there are other government healthcare-related websites that work great, socialsecurity.gov and a whole bunch of others. They know how to do it, but if they didn't get it ready and on time, then maybe fix the problem, make sure that people don't have to worry about it.
All right.
Thanks very much. Brian, you're going to have more on the story later in the Situation Room as well.
How do you like that? That staunch right-wing cable news network, CNN, a.k.a. the Communist News Network, or certainly not news, and Wolf Blitzer, who's clearly a right-wing legislative arsonist Tea Party anarchist, just basically told Obama right. to take the advice of the Republicans and delay this thing because it's not working. It's not even working as it should. I mean, we obviously this whole thing is designed to collapse to bring about a single-payer system, but it was supposed to work initially. It's not even working as it was initially supposed to because they're not only evil in trying to destroy the Constitutional Republic and the free market and your liberty, but they're also incompetent, which, you know, isn't necessarily a bad thing, as if they were competent and proficient and efficient, we'd already be screwed. But it's just fascinating to me that they pushed this thing out there, and now you've got lefties like Wolf Blitzer saying maybe that they should listen to the Republicans. Well, that's exactly why there's a shutdown. This shutdown occurred because some Republicans, chiefly the conservatives like Ted Cruz, stood up on principle. That's what they were elected to do, and they actually did it. And you supported them by over 2 million
yeah,
of you
surprise,
signing
surprise.
DontFundIt.com. Keep signing DontFundIt.com. Keep getting people there. Keep putting the pressure on because that's what made this work. And that basically forced real legislative initiatives in Congress, which put Harry Reid in the position where in order to defend this failed piece of legislation and the leader of his party to shut down the government. That's what it happened. And shutdowns, which are a normal part of the legislative process of the last 40 years because of the overspending, force negotiations. And we haven't had one in 17 years, and last time was actually pretty successful, and this time it can be successful provided you don't cave. So tell your representative, tell the Senate not to cave, because that's how you win this fight. And you can see the tide is already turning because of all the pain that they were trying to bring by shutting down monuments, by keeping World War II vets out of the World War II memorial, which was always open, and now you spent money to actually close something that was always open, while you permitted a bunch of illegal aliens who don't have civil rights in this country because they're not citizens to have an amnesty rally on the mall, which is closed because of the shutdown. And now some of the private parks that were shut down illegally are reopening because of the pressure. People are just fed up with it. And when these truckers descend on D.C. tomorrow, you're going to see how fed up people really are. So the pressure has to maintain. And politicians are squishy people. For the most part, they're just go along, get along, wanting to go to the parties and be popular and not be beat up in the media. Put pressure on them. You have to make them fear you more than they fear the Washington insiders, the prostitutes, and their financial backers. Was that interesting, Chris, that Wolf Blitzer said that?
Yeah, I remember when that clip first came out, and I thought it was great. And it was just – that's what you call good reporting. Reporting is report the damn facts. You know, don't play the party line. And, you know, that's a challenge. If we had – the information that I research or you research out there in the mainstream media, this whole conversation nationally would be totally different because they're ignoring facts. They're ignoring the shutdown issues and how it's impacting people, the games that the administration is paying. You know, I think most Americans would be pretty pissed off right now to know that all of our
you know, despot dictators around the world are still getting their billions of dollars while we can't go to our national parks. You know, that, I mean, when you see that kind of stuff, you're not going to hear it on mainstream media, but when you see it, it becomes really clear the game that's being played. So anyway, you want to move to the national debt or the debt ceiling or whatever the hell we're talking about now.
Yeah, we're gonna get into it. Well, here's the thing. Right now, look, the Republicans are prone to be squishes. They like being the minority-controlled opposition party.
Is a squish like a squid?
No, a squid is basically, you know, the Navy boys. A squish is like a wussy or a sissy or a girly man.
is that like
I guess.
A yellow ducky, one of those little duckies that you have in your bath tub?
No, those are
squishy
cute.
Toys.
No, those are cute. The squishy toys are cute. The squishes in Washington, D.C., they tend to look like Golem or trolls or Barbara McCulkin.
You mean they're more like,
or Harry
more
Reid.
Like a jellyfish? Like
yeah,
a
they're more like a jellyfish. Yeah, they're some kind of invertebrate. They have no spine. Give them a spine. Make them have a spine. Force them to have a spine. So here's the thing. The Republicans are, and I don't have, if anything's developed in the last couple hours, I haven't been able to keep up with it, but basically the Republicans are negotiating with Obama, who's not willing to negotiate. And the idea is that they're willing to give him a short-term debt ceiling increase for 6 weeks. As bad as that is, that's fine, in order to get him to concede on going to conference, which is all the Republicans have been asking for, is now that they've passed 14 bills funding the government, except for Obamacare, they just want to go to conference and work these details out. So, you know, Obamacare's failed. We've just spent an hour, God knows how long, talking about it, plus six other shows. And so all that's being asked here is that they come and they negotiate in good faith, and the Republicans are willing to give them a little something in order to get a little something, but Harry Reid and Obama have to actually give something up, and that something has to be delaying Obamacare. On that, we won't budge. Okay. Other things, sure. Because let's face it, all these CRs funding the government, most of them are funding shit that we don't like. But for now, we're willing to do it, provided that this other monster that would destroy the economy is delayed for 1 year, which gives you an opportunity in 2014 to send in reinforcements for Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and Mike Lee and Justin Amash and Trey Gowdy and all the other good guys. So that's what the Republicans are proposing. Who knows how the negotiations are going to go, because Obama, you know, has already made it clear that he's not willing to negotiate. But in simple terms, this is John Boehner talking about it earlier today as to what they were planning on doing.
You know, the president is fond of saying that no one gets everything they want in a negotiation. And frankly, I agree with that. Nobody gets everything they want. But over the course of the last 10 days, we've been trying to have conversations with our Democrat colleagues. They don't want to talk. The president doesn't want to talk. We've tried to offer bills that would reopen parts of the government, only to have them rejected by our counterparts over in the United States Senate. So what we want to do is offer the president today the ability to move a temporary increase in the debt ceiling in agreement to go to conference on the budget. For his willingness to sit down and discuss with us a way forward to reopen the government and to start to deal with America's pressing problems. Listen, it's time for leadership. It's time for these negotiations and this conversation to begin. And I would hope that the president will look at this as an opportunity and a good faith effort on our part to move halfway to what he's demanded in order to have these conversations begin.
Well, there's John Boehner sounding reasonable. I don't necessarily care much for the guy. I think he's a squish. But, you know, he is the Speaker of the House for now, because the Republicans were too much political shills in order to replace him in January when they had an opportunity. But that's neither here nor there. You deal with the team you've got. He's the Speaker of the House. At least he's standing on point on this one. But he will cave at the first opportunity he can if you allow him. Don't let him cave. Keep the pressure on. Thank him for doing the things he does that you like, but keep the pressure on that he doesn't play any tricks or cave, and keep an eye out for that little guy that's behind Boehner, little Eric Cantnot, because that one's a real slimy fish, and he's likely to put in some kind of caving resolution. And also don't forget about mini Mitt Romney, okay? Paul Ryan, the, quote, budget numbers guy, right, who read Ayn Rand and felt so strongly for individualism that he's a career politician in government. I mean, give me a break, okay? But here's the simple thing. Just keep the pressure on them because they have to – no, that doesn't mean that they don't compromise. Remember, one of the criticisms Newt Gingrich got from the rhinos that ousted him back in 99 was that he was erratic. And every day he would come back with some new idea. Well, every day he talked to Bill Clinton. And after 3 weeks, okay, this is the second shutdown from December 15, 1995 through January 6, 1996. That was the second shutdown, okay. Clinton finally came to the table and Gingrich got conservative things done with a popular, liberal, powerful Democrat in the White House. And that's when Clinton came out and said the era of big government is over. Now, we know that that's complete bullshit because the government is like twice the size it was 17 years ago. But nevertheless, he was able to speak in those terms because they started moving things back in the right direction until the rhinos got rid of Gingrich and brought in Rove's compassionate conservatism and went on a fucking drunken sailor spending spree that brought you the Democrats back into the Congress and brought you Obama in 2008. So the simple fact is that you keep this pressure on, and that's how negotiations happen. Don't let them cave. And don't fall for this lie that I won't negotiate on the debt ceiling because we're not going to default on our bills for the first time in 200 and some thousand, you know, years. We didn't default on our bills for most of that time because we weren't borrowing this kind of money, Mr. Obama. We weren't borrowing this kind of money. And then he comes up with this bullshit that raising the debt ceiling doesn't increase the debt. Well, if you raise the debt ceiling,
that was amazing.
All you're doing is getting more debt. Now, the idea is that, well, we can't fund Social Security and Medicare and the interest payments, and if we default on the interest on our bonds, everything will go haywire. Well, while all that is true, because Social Security and Medicare are so friggin' embedded in our society that you can't just turn them off tomorrow, and you have to pay the interest on your debt, otherwise no one's going to lend you any more money except your own Federal Reserve, and the only way they lend you money is by devaluing your dollar. But the simple fact is we have enough money coming in to pay the interest. And then, you know, well, but some of the short-term debt is coming up for redemption. Well, for the most part, people don't actually redeem, you know, at least sovereign countries don't actually redeem these bonds. They kind of keep the same level of debt. So let's say that your debt ceiling is at $17 trillion, and let's just assume you've got $6 trillion of bonds that are actually maturing, which I don't think the number's that high, but just as for example, $6 trillion maturing, which means that you've got to pay those people their $6 trillion of principal. Well, if you pay the $6 trillion of principal, which you can't because you don't have the money, although Ben Bernanke could just print it for you, he's certainly printing up $85 trillion a month already.
Billion.
Then you pay $8 billion. You, whatever, trillion, billion, quadrillion, who gives a shit? It's more money than we can ever imagine. You can pay the $6 trillion, and then you still have a $17 trillion debt ceiling, which means now you've got $6 trillion of new bond issues you can issue. Now, obviously, nobody's going to want your worthless paper unless you pay them more interest. And right now, we're paying like somewhere around 1.8% on the intermediate crap, and we're paying somewhere around 5, I think, for the 30-year notes, which, again, is a worthless number, and we won't have this worthless paper around in 30 years anyway, but that's neither here nor there. So you can still restructure the debt, even if you don't raise the debt ceiling, provided that you actually cut your spending and you pay only those vital things, which include, and we have enough money to cover, Social Security, Medicare, interest on the debt, defense, vets, military, okay? You can pay for those things. What you have to do is cut the bloat out of the government in order to not keep spending money you don't have. When you have 25% of your workforce as non-essential employees, it's entirely possible you've gotten too fucking big. So maybe we shrink the government a little bit, or at least not grow it as fast. And let's keep in mind, if you don't grow it as fast and you don't spend, you don't increase spending, okay, you actually cut it by just 1%, and you unleash the power of the American economy by not having something like Obamacare put on top of it, by lowering taxes.
Isn't that bad for the environment?
Yeah, by reducing the burdensome regulations, then you will increase your gross national wealth, which will increase tax receipts to the government, and then you can actually fund it just simply by cutting 1%, and within 5 years you'd have a balanced budget. It's pretty simple.
That, you know what? Didn't we have a president that did that once?
Well, we had a couple of them. But most recently, yeah, I think we did. Oh, yeah, it was Mr. Voodoo Economics, right? Isn't that what Reagan did? Now, people will come back at you, Chris, and say, well, that's not true. Deficits increased dramatically under Reagan. Did they? Was it really Reagan who increased those deficits? Or was it the rhino-led Senate by Bob Dole, who's been trotted out of his crypt somewhere to start talking about how these negotiations and they have to raise the debt ceiling? I mean, come on, people. Stop listening to the guys who pretend to be conservative who aren't. Anyway.
Yeah, don't listen to liberals try to explain to you about how to fix the economy, because their whole goal is to not fix the economy. Their goal is to continue to add programs, print more money, borrow more money. You know, they've actually got about, I don't know if it's half this country, but about 28-30% of this country that believes that there's no end to this, that you can just keep doing this crap. And yet, I don't know, it's pretty mind-boggling to me that Americans have become this, for lack of a better word, stupid.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't run your household this way, you know. It's pretty basic stuff.
Yeah, it is basic stuff. And here's the thing. This panic over the debt ceiling is simply because they want to borrow more money, and this lie that you're hearing from the Democrats that they have compromised. We've agreed to the Republicans' number, which is less than the number that we want, so we've compromised. Bullshit. First of all, the number the Republicans put out there is the number that Obama forced on them through the sequester, because remember, that was his idea. He signed it, right? So the sequester is there. It's law, right? It's the law of the land. You have to enforce the law of the land. We keep hearing that. The sequester is also the law right now. So that's the number the Republicans put out there. The Democrats wanted to increase it back to pre-sequester levels, and they consider that a compromise. You know, that's like me taking a hammer to your forehead and bashing you on a regular basis. When I stop, you go, oh, thank you for stopping bashing my head in with a hammer. That's not a benefit. I shouldn't
like
bash you in the head.
That $300,000 you saved because you didn't buy the Maserati.
Yeah, I didn't buy the Ferrari. I saved $300,000. It's illusory.
Yeah.
You're right. It's a bunch of crap. So don't fall for it. The simple fact is that these people just want to spend, 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 because it is how they buy political patronage, and it is also how they wreck the system. Remember something. These people are socialists. They hate the free market. They hate it. They hate the fact that you have the liberty to dispose of your economic production in the way that you see best suited for your needs, the needs of your family, the needs of your community. That's what they hate. They despise it. They want to control your life. They want to control you. They want to control your economic liberty. And the way that they do that is by blaming, you know, by putting in these programs that are not free market programs. These are government interventions, and then blaming the free market when it fails, when in fact it wasn't the free market. See, right now when Obamacare fails, you heard what Sebelius told Stewart. Oh, yes, we have free market provisions in these exchanges, and people get to go shopping like they do on Kayak. That's the meme they're selling you. This is total intervention. It's going to fail because of government intervention, and then they're going to blame it on the market and tell you that the free market is no good. Okay? That's the scam. That's the game. Don't fall for it. And don't fall for this debt ceiling thing. Now, I'm not saying they're not going to raise the debt ceiling. I'm not saying that they shouldn't. I mean, ideally, I wouldn't want them to. But if they get something for it, whether it's the six-week one where they get the conference, and then if they're going to raise it again, whatever the number happens to be that, you know, they need to restructure the debt or whatever, if they get spending cuts for it, then we're on the right track, provided that the spending cuts are greater than the increase in the debt. That's how it has to work.
And they don't happen in 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. So like what they did to Reagan, right?
Yeah, I'll gladly pay you for a hamburger tomorrow.
Yeah. If you give me the hamburger today, I'll pay you on Tuesday, right? Wimpy. That's the trick they pulled with Reagan, right? And it was the Tip O'Neill House and the Bob Dole Senate, right, which was his own party, allegedly. Remember, the Republicans hated Reagan. Now, of course, they trot him out all the time, so the Democrats, they like to fool you. But here's a simple fact. They told Reagan that if he increased spending, they would give him tax cuts. So he signed off on increasing the spending, which increased the deficits. The tax cuts never came. Okay, that's the trick. So if they decide to give you, if we allow Obama to borrow more money now for spending cuts we're going to get over the next 5 years, you'll never see those spending cuts. That's the trick. The spending cuts have to be real and immediate, and the raising of the debt limit has to be sequential. Now, here's the thing.
It's the same thing, Rex, is saying that we'll, give us legalization in 1985 or 86, and then we'll increase the border security and build fences. Never happened.
Right. That's the trick. That's why they keep saying it. Yeah. They're always delaying it. Like right now they're telling you, first it was, why are we doing this debate with Obamacare over the CR? Why can't we just fund the CR as it is and then we'll have the debate later? Because we're having the debate now because that's the only
way
to force you to do it. And then they say, well, we should debate on the debt ceiling. Well, here we are now debating on the debt ceiling, and they still want you to defer the issue. The idea is to just keep kicking the can down the road, more debt, and any of the legislative initiatives that will actually roll back the federal Leviathan. We have to delay those, delay them 6 weeks, delay them 6 months, delay them a year, delay them 3 years, delay them until the next election. And the Republicans do the same thing. Yes, we'll get you a more liberty-minded conservative candidate next election. This election, we want you to vote for liberal Democrat Mitt Romney, right? But in the 4 years prior, they said, okay, we'll get you a real conservative, liberty-minded candidate next election, but in this election, we need you to vote for Jihad Jane McComet. And in the prior one, it was Bob Dole. So, delay is no good, and delay is what got us here, and it's been 100 years that we've been delaying this crap. And it's gotten to the point where we're in the final stages of a fiat paper scheme, and if we don't fix it soon, there is going to really be a default. And let's be clear about something. They don't default by not raising the debt ceiling. They default by lowering the value of the currency in which the bonds and the debt is denominated. That's how it's done. So don't fall for this debt ceiling lie. It's a bunch of hogwash. And one of the only sound voices on the Hill that
talks about this. Before you roll on there, let me add one more thing to this. This thing on the default bullcrap. Currently, right now, the Fed is printing $85 billion a month and infusing it into the economy. So they're already printing the damn money. So, just remember that when you hear this scare crap about default and we need more money. They're already dumping $85 billion a month of phony money into the economy. So there ain't no default happening. This is just a sales job. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's no default happening because of this. There is a default happening because of the worthless paper that we call money. But that's neither here nor there. That's a separate issue that we have to fight with at another time. You fight the battles one at a time when you can, and this is the pressing one right now. But one of the only sound voices on the Hill that talks about this stuff is the junior senator from Kentucky, and that's probably because the only reason his father was ever in politics was he wanted to bring out the issue of sound money and accidentally became a congressman and may have taught him a thing or two. Here's Rand Paul. Unfortunately, it's from Fox News, but ignore the prostitute that's asking him the questions and just listen to Rand Paul. It's about 5 minutes long.
So the president's position that, we're not going to sit down and talk to you until you surrender is just not sustainable. It's not our system of government.
The American people do not get to demand a ransom for doing their jobs. You don't get a chance to call your bank and say, I'm not going to pay my mortgage this month unless you throw in a new car and an Xbox.
An Xbox and a new car. Partial shutdown day 9, debt ceiling deadline 8 days away, America. Senator Rand Paul believes all this talk about financial Armageddon is the debt limit is breached is a bunch of hot air. Senator is with me now. How come?
Well, the thing is we bring in about $250 billion in tax revenue every month, and our interest payment is about $20 billion. So really, 10% of the money we bring in goes towards the interest payment, or a little bit less than 10%. We have plenty of money to keep paying our interest. The president should cut it out. He should quit trying to scare the markets and scare investors. He should come forward if he's a leader and say, we will not default. We have never defaulted, and America is a proud country. We will not default.
Let me rip through a bunch of questions here. What did you think of his offer to, open the government and raise the debt ceiling, then we'll talk? What did you think of that?
Well, I agree with Speaker Boehner. He sort of wants everything he wants. He wants us to completely capitulate, and then maybe he'll talk to us later. But you have to put this in perspective. He's been president for 5 years, and he's added $7 trillion in debt. The only time he negotiated something that was good for the country was when the sequester happened at the same time we raised the debt limit in 2011. He will not negotiate unless he's forced to negotiate. His mantra, his personal belief system, everything he's about is adding debt unconditionally to this country, and I think he's dragging the country down.
How then do you get him away from that position? I mean, how do you see a way out of this now?
He will need to negotiate. He will need to compromise. He needs to come forward, and he needs to say to the American people, I realize that we've added too much debt and that this debt is a burden on our country, and I will negotiate a compromise. I think we need something on the orders of like the sequester. I'm for a penny plan. Let's cut the budget 1% across the board, and it actually balances the budget within 5 years.
That would be like sequester 2.0.
But I'd love it.
How do you get concessions out of the president if you believe he believes what he does?
The only way you get concessions out of him is, unfortunately, you have to negotiate around this deadline. If you let him have what he wants, he will not negotiate because his personal belief system, and most Democrats believe this, is that deficits don't matter, the debt doesn't matter. In fact, Harry Reid has said there is no problem with Social Security debt, with Medicare debt. They just blindly wish it away. The only way they'll negotiate is if they're forced to negotiate. So really, you can't give in or nothing good will happen towards trying to rectify the
problem. Can Republicans get concessions on Obamacare at this moment?
I'm not positive what the concessions will be, and I don't want to preclude any kind of arrangement or deal that will come forward. The deal needs to do something about the debt and something about the spending.
All right. If you do not get concessions on Obamacare, does he prevail on that?
You know, I think what we do is we keep pushing for what he will negotiate. But I think at this point, he's arguing that he wants 100% of Obamacare and he wants 100% of the ability to keep loading debt on this country. I think neither one of those are tenable positions, and he needs to compromise. He needs to negotiate.
Well, we were looking at some of the headlines. Politico's been running a story, and the headline is GOP unity frays, frustration builds. That's dated October 8th. There's another one. Washington Post shutdown exposes depth of rift between GOP lawmakers. I looked at the Politico article. I could not find a quote attributed to one member of the Republican Party that said that they were falling apart. Now, I mean, what is the true sense on the inside? Are you united or not?
The truth is, don't believe everything you read on the internet. No, I think we're actually very, very united on this. The idea that we have to do something, we can't keep piling on new debt, and that raising the debt ceiling is bad, and that the only way we'll support raising a debt ceiling would be if there's significant reform to spending, significant reform to the budget.
But you're saying Republicans are united. No breaks in the ranks.
Yeah, I think you'll find that we're very united, that raising the debt ceiling without any kind of structural reform, any kind of budgetary reform, without any kind of concern for all this debt that President Obama's adding to the country, I don't think it's going to happen.
Okay. Rand Paul, Senator, thank you for your time. The Republican from Kentucky on the Hill with us. Martha.
Yeah, I love Rand's conversation through this whole battle, you know, from Obamacare forward. He's been steady. He's very clear, he's very calm, and he's nailing the main issues. And one of the frustrations I think that most people are going to have, if they look at it historically, is the fact that Republicans have caved multiple times over the last 4 years, and that's weakened their position. That's the problem. And the guy at the head of that, or the guys, you know, McConnell and Boehner, but Boehner from the House side, have continually folded and folded and folded and folded. So it gives the left a broader platform of attack to make, you know, the Rand and the Cruises and the rest of them look like wacko birds. When in reality, I mean, if you go back not very long ago, it is amazing because those guys would have been just normal Republicans. You know, that's the frustrating part. And somewhere along the line in the last 12 years, from Bush through Obama, we've gotten to a point where we're actually in agreement on raising debt ceilings way too many times, you know, without the battles that we're having now. That's the frustrating part, because anybody who looks at the history of it knows that we have fought it and fought it and fought it and fought it. Didn't always win, and obviously it's taken us, you know, down the wrong road through the years. but especially since Newt left the House, you know, when they were actually reforming government and paying down the debt and reforming welfare and actually got balanced budgets, you know, based on baseline. Yeah, I understand that. But you know what I'm saying? That was the last time we saw any of that stuff.
Yeah, it was the closest thing to an actual balanced budget.
Republicans have been, they've been whores, you know, since then.
Well, yeah, and even before then. But let's be clear, there's fighting the debt ceiling and then there's fighting the debt ceiling. Okay, the real fight over not raising the debt ceiling is let's not borrow more money unless we also cut spending by a greater amount to get this thing back in order. Okay, but then
which
there's
is
also
always the
fighting.
Argument.
No, well, yeah, but some people don't mean it. For the most part, whichever party is in charge of Congress and the president is the opposite party, they'll speak against raising the debt ceiling. And here's the tricky thing, okay? The debt ceiling, first of all, isn't even in the Constitution. This is something Congress fabricated as a statutory law, okay? The Constitution does give Congress the power to go into debt. The Founding Fathers only envisioned the Congress going into debt in time of war. Okay, legitimate defensive war. That's when they envisioned that the Congress might have to put the federal government in debt in order to fund the war. Not for all these ridiculous extra-constitutional programs that we can't afford. I mean, when you add it all up right now, there's over $210 trillion of total debt. And we're only talking about the $17 trillion of public debt. So it's a rhetorical fight. So what the Congress basically does is they say that, you know, the debt ceiling is X, right? And then they send a budget over to the White House, whichever president's in power, they send the budget over to the White House that's, you know, $1 trillion more than, you know, what they take in tax receipts. And then the president comes back and says, I got to raise the debt ceiling because the budget's more than $1 trillion. Well, how about Congress sends over a budget that isn't $1 trillion over tax receipts? Maybe then the president wouldn't have to ask for a debt ceiling increase. It's a game. It's a friggin' game. And keep in mind something. In violation of the Anti-Deficiency Act, that's how this White House is operating, okay, which means that unless Congress appropriates the money, you can't spend it. And then, of course, you know, he's spending it by making non-essential employees essential employees, by shutting things down that cost more money to shut down than it costs to keep them running, all this crap to make the, quote, Republican Tea Party shutdown painful. Well, people aren't buying that anymore. More and more Americans are starting to blame the Democrats and the White House than they are the Republicans, and less people are blaming the Tea Party legislative arsonist hostage takers for this whole mess. And the longer this goes on, the more truth comes out, the more people realize this is a bunch of bullshit.
Too.
Yeah.
They have guns in their head, too.
Right. So here's the thing, though. It's just a game. And what happened is that remember, we got, I think maybe tomorrow, you know, Obama's going to nominate the replacement for Ben Bernanke. Just so that we're clear, no matter who it is, it's probably going to be this Yellen woman. All right. No matter who it is, it doesn't matter who the mouthpiece of the Federal Reserve bankers is, because they'll always do what they're told. Okay. Don't think that the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board has any say so. And keep in mind, you know, it's federal oversight because the president gets to appoint and nominate. Well, the way that it works is the Federal Reserve itself gives him a list of people that he can pick from. So they actually pick the person. Whichever one he picks, it doesn't matter because they're all shills for the Federal Reserve. And keep in mind that all the bankers, especially Morgan Chase, came down to the White House to have a little conversation with POTUS. And they basically told him, here's the deal. The bond market is about to implode. It has nothing to do with the $17 trillion debt. It has nothing to do with the interest rate. It has everything to do with the derivatives and interest swaps that we've put out there. And if you don't raise the debt ceiling, we're going to collapse. It'll be worse than what happened with Lehman Brothers. So you'd better fucking raise the debt ceiling. That's what they told him. And so he's going to fight tooth and nail to do it. And frankly, the Republicans are likely to give it to him, which I'm okay with, even though in principle I hate this raising of the debt ceiling, provided that through this shutdown and these negotiations, you force something. That something has to be the delay of Obamacare implementation on the individuals and real spending cuts, not fake spending cuts. That's what has to happen to start moving the ball in the other direction. For all you purists out there, don't let the great be the enemy of the good. I know you hate incrementalism, but the simple fact is it took us a century to get here. You ain't going to undo it in a week, a year, or 5 years. It's going to take time. That's just the reality of the situation. So you've got people like Rand Paul, you've got people like Ted Cruz, you've got people who are doing a good job. support them. Support them and also work locally, because that's where the real power in this country is if we start exercising it. But it's a double-edged strategy. You work locally, but you also need some champions on the federal level to start rolling this thing back. Believe it or not, we've only got 10 minutes live. My guess is Chris and I are going to probably spill into overtime a little bit, but I don't want to go too long. If you want to continue listening live, and there's a bunch of you who are, you have to call in and listen on your phone, because your browser or mobile device is going to cut you off in about 10 minutes at midnight Eastern. The call-in number is 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. Can't take any calls because we are going to try to wrap up, but you can continue to listen live. If you're listening to it in podcast or MP3, just keep rolling, and we'll try to get you some more relevant information and wrap it up. To you, Chris.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. I don't think people understand, you know, and I hopefully will cover more economic issues as we roll forward, but understand the trap that we're in. And it's come from, you know, you can go back in time and bring it forward, but if you want to look at the last four and a half years, it's come from a massive overexpenditure and expansion of federal government in an economic down cycle. And it's huge. And it's so big, and it's so intrusive that to, you know, we're so right on the edge, you know, this bond market crap, and the Fed printing all this money, buying up all the bonds and the mortgage-backed securities and all these things. It is so fragile right now. And at which, for an argument, you know, from an economic standpoint, is why you do not implement Obamacare. And you manage the systems that you have and make corrections in them. But for some reason, these psychos, you know, I think they believe their whole political future is tied to this. I think it's another reason that they want to, you know, make 11-plus million illegals legal so they can sign them up on Obamacare and just embed this massive entitlement program on top of the rest of them that we have into the system and just lock it down. And it's a pretty... For lack of a better term, it's a pretty evil thought process to do that to a nation, but they're trying to do it, and it's serious stuff. And you and I talk all the time about economics, but you know, we're regardless of what happens with Obamacare, doesn't happen with Obamacare, and the debt ceiling doesn't happen with the debt ceiling. There is a correction coming, and this crazy psycho Yemen or whatever her name is. You know, she's like a protege of Bernanke. So, you know, it's print and print and continue to print. She's all in on QE. And so that's a terrible. We've gone through recessions. We've gone through depressions. You know, the Great Depression, we at least had a gold-backed dollar. There were some restrictions on it. You know, even you know, if you want to get into a little bit of historical study, you can go back and study every recession that we've had. You can see economic factors. You can see government intrusion factors, new laws that were passed, and you can always tie to the banking industry, and you can see, you know, a chemistry there for every recession that's ever happened. But the key is they do happen. The question is what do you do on the backside of them? Well, here's the problem. Printing and borrowing and giving all this money out at 0 or 0.4 or whatever percent they've, you know, given this money out, you know, just very, very low, keeping the pressure cooker on, there's going to come a point in time when that can no longer be done. And when interest rates start to rise, I hope people are ready. That's all I can say, because I'm not going to play some, you know, conspiracy theory mindset on people. But corrections always happen. And we have not had it yet. That's the thing, that if people would do the research, they would understand that nothing is corrected in this market so far. It's all been hyper infused with cash, and you know, whether it's printed or borrowed money, and so nothing's corrected yet.
Well, that's the only thing that they can do, right? In order to sell you a recovery, they have to inflate asset prices. That doesn't mean that their value goes up.
Yeah.
In fact, if you wanted the same value in your market securities, whether it's in your 201K or your IRA or whatever the fuck you own, you would have to have the Dow at somewhere around 30,000 today to equal what it did back in 07 before this thing came down. You're seeing it at somewhere around 15, and you're thinking, oh, it's higher than 14 when it peaked in 07, so I've gotten my money back. No, you haven't, because if you measure it in 2013 dollars, it would be $30,000, and it's nowhere near that. It's about half of that. So you've pretty much lost half your value, and you're losing more and faster. And look, the only way out of a fiat paper scheme, okay, is to devalue the currency so that you're paying back the debt with worthless amounts. In the meantime, what's happened is that the wealth has been appropriated through – inflation is nothing more than a confiscation scheme and a hidden tax that damages the poorest people the worst because they pay the highest percentage of it because inflation affects all of us, especially those who receive the money last. So when they create new money, which is debt, out of thin air – it is those closest to government that enjoy it at its full value. The defense contractors, the pharma industrial complex, all the furloughed employees, they enjoy the dollar at full value. By the time it gets to you, Mr. and Mrs. America, Mr. and Mrs. Small Business Owner, it's devalued and you're paying more for shit that you used to pay less for. Just take a look at your grocery bill. You're paying like, you know, almost $4 for a gallon of milk. You're paying $12 for a canister of coffee that used to cost you $8 and less than $2. And gas. Gas is ridiculous. Now, here's the thing. Go ahead.
Here's one. Let me throw this in there for you'll be able to pick up where you left off. I just heard a quick one of those blurb reports on the radio yesterday or the day before, whatever, and they said that everybody needs to expect their home heating costs to go up 15% this winter. You don't hear that in the conversation on the national level. I mean, it's there's so many little signs of correction, and these aren't the real correction. These are just little adjustments on the way to the real correction. So, you know, anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I did. Sorry.
No, that's fine. You're making a good point. Yeah, it's fine. No, it's not an interruption. We're almost out of airtime. So if you still want to listen and you're in live, because there's a lot of you live, you got to call 646-649-1013. I'm going to get to a 4.5-minute clip from someone who I think actually makes sense. Peter Schiff, he has his own radio show, and I just grabbed the clip off.
He's
it.
Awesome.
And it's you know, he's an Austrian, so he understands this stuff. But there's a couple of things you have to keep in mind.
Does that mean he's from Austria?
Yeah, no, unfortunately it doesn't. Austria is just a place
where
you
want to explain
school
that.
Yeah. The Austrian School of Economics. All right.
Thank you.
The best place to find out about it is at Mises.org. That's Mises.org in Auburn, Alabama. It is the Ludwig von Mises Institute. Mises was one of the founders of the Austrian school. It is the only school of economic thought that actually makes sense. Most of the crap that you hear, most of the stuff spewed out by the parrots and the prostitutes is Keynesian economics. And keep in mind that Lord Maynard Keynes – okay, was a queer Fabian socialist, which means, and their logo for the Fabian socialists, you can look it up on Google or whatever, is a wolf in sheep's clothing. And why is that? Because they are coming to you as economists, as you know, intelligent technocrats, administrators who are for sound economics, and what they really are social engineers who intend to have control of society by destroying free market economics and building a command structure. And most of the liberals have bought into this crap, like Paul Krugman.
Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and for those of you who've ever got into the world order conspiracy, blah, 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 there it is right there.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not not aliens, it's not the Jews, it's not, it's not demonic forces, even though there might be demonic
forces.
It's not
the Roman Church.
Yeah, it's not the Catholic Church. What it is simply, and this is just so simple to understand, there is a conspiracy. Conspiracies do happen all the time. Powerful, greedy men with money will often conspire to keep it. That's all that this is. It's very simple to understand. You don't have to go into the extreme fringes of psychotic, unsubstantiated things like, the Pentavidus. You know, it's the five families that control the world, the Gettys, the Rothschilds, the Vatican, the Queen, and Colonel Sanders before he went pizza up. Okay, you have to get into all that stuff. It's pretty simple. And the thing to understand is you have to understand the terms, both in practical terms. You have to understand Austrian economics. Just start off with Henry Hazlitt's Economics in One Lesson. Very simple. You can get a free PDF of it at Mises.org. And you have to understand the economic terms in relation to Keynesianism. One of the tenets of Keynesianism is the money multiplier and the velocity of money. By pumping money By pumping money into the system, you create a velocity of money which creates a multiplier and increases wealth. Well, that's complete bullshit. However, it does work in the short term. Unfortunately, Ben Bernanke's created a shitload of money and no velocity. That's why this thing is collapsing. We've created shitloads of money. I'm talking about over $15 trillion since 07 that we know of. There's more than that probably. But the velocity is not there. It's not getting into the hands of small business. The big corporations are sitting on piles of cash. I mean, if you buy Apple stock today, even at its super elevated value, and let me just be clear about something. When Apple fails, because they will, because the iPad is not that good, it's got competition. The iPhone's not that good, it's got competition. Every time Apple has failed in the past, they brought Jobs back. Guess what? He ain't coming back this time. Nevertheless, if you buy Apple stock, 40% of that right now is cash. Okay? So they're not investing. They're not buying. Obamacare is making companies not likely to hire, not likely to invest, not likely to grow. It's going
to
send more of their manufacturing capabilities overseas. Yep, overseas. So all this fake money that he's created hasn't created any velocity other than propping up the stock market to modest levels of around 15 to 15.7. That's it, okay? And what Yellen is going to try to do, number one, is shift the blame of the coming collapse onto the political class,
your
congressional critters and the White House, to tell you that the bankers knew what they were doing, and had the politicians listened to them, everything would have worked out fine. That's a fucking lie. And she's going to try to get this velocity going. Now, she can't do it by lowering interest rates because Ben Bernanke's kept them at damn near zero for too long. So they're going to try some other tricks. And most of it is going to piss off the rest of the world, and they're going to keep moving away from the dollar, which eventually is bad for us. I'm not saying that I'm married to the Federal Reserve note, but it's bad for our economy if they all move away unless we create a sound monetary unit, and then we can actually trade with these people on a fair level. We can outcompete them, and we can outproduce them if you unleash the American creativity. So the simple thing is you have to understand these terms, and the scare over the debt ceiling is a bunch of bullshit. And the first thing you have to keep in mind is get your terms straight, because they conflate them all the time.
Right.
And these prostitutes on TV, I mean, I don't know where they graduated from, what they know. If they're not reading the teleprompter, they sound like children. They mess up all the time. Deficits and debt are not the same thing. The deficit is the amount of excessive spending that the federal government wastes its money on, your money actually, that isn't covered by incoming tax receipts. That's the deficit, the difference between what they bring in and what they throw away. The debt is the amount that's borrowed. And when we say debt, generally we're talking about the public debt, which is mostly U.S. government securities. It's about $17 trillion. When you add in all the debt, as in what are the obligations of the government, counting Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, all that stuff, it's over $210 trillion. Dollars. It is
retirement.
An unpayable amount. Right. It's an unpayable amount. And the only way that they can cover it is by making the dollar so worthless that $210 trillion is nothing. It's sort of like Zimbabwe. Everybody in Zimbabwe is a friggin' trillionaire, but they can't afford a loaf of bread. That's what will happen here if we don't get our heads on right and fix this. It's an economic problem caused by politicians who are in bed with the big corporations and the banks. That's the problem. And the only way you stop it is by force. And what happened here is the Republicans stood up because you forced them to. Boehner acted like a conservative because you forced him to, and you gave Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and Mike Lee the power to do what they're doing. And so what happened? In order to provide cover for the incompetent moron in the White House, Harry Reid shut down the fucking government. Now, he only shut down 17%. My opinion, shut the rest of it down for a week. Let's see how that works out. I mean, other than military, of course.
Save some money.
Yeah, be kind of interesting. And how about we fire all the congressmen, or at least tell them, you know what, until you get this shit fixed, you guys only get $0. Period. You don't get paid until you fix this shit. How about that? Ted Cruz is not getting paid. He's giving away his money, by the way. So that's where
we
are.
And then in 2014, get rid of anybody who's been part of this game.
Yeah.
Vote them out.
Especially Mitch. Yeah, especially Mitch McConnell, Bob Corker, Jihad Jane McHammed, Lindsey Grahamnesty, over in the House, get rid of little Eric Cantnot, Joe McCartney, whatever the hell his name is, the whip. And you know what, while you're at it, get rid of Paul Ryan. and get rid of Boehner. I mean, I know he's, you know, doing the right thing now, and you need to, you know, keep encouraging him to do that, keep pressuring him to do it. But either way, he's a squish.
Right,
get rid of him.
Get rid of him.
You know, get rid of him. So that's what you have to do. 2014 is happening right now. This is a Republican victory to lose. Who's going to lose it? The squishes. Whose victory is it? It's not just a victory for the party. The party is just a shell. And, yes, some of them will take credit for this after the fact, okay? But it's really a win for conservatives, for libertarians, and for people who love the Constitution. If you keep the pressure on, so call these bastards and straighten them out in large numbers, and not only call them, okay? Calling is the most effective tool, not because they care what you have to say. They really don't care. Some intern is probably underpaid or not even paid at all, who's answering the phone. Don't go into a dissertation about what's wrong and what's happening. In simple terms, just tell them what you're for and what you're against. They just tally this shit up, okay? So 1,000 people call in today, and they all say, don't cave, delay Obamacare, don't agree to a CR without or a debt ceiling increase without getting some cuts and delaying Obamacare. They're just going to tally it up, and they're going to say, hey, 950 people said that's what they want. 50 people said they don't care. They're going to go with the 950, especially if you get other people to call. The number for the switchboard is 202-224-3121, 202-224-3121. Do your part. Get other people involved. Share the show.
And I was going to – I wanted to tie something in on that point about calling and emails and Twitter and everything else. I was listening to a interview, and Cruz said that calling is the most effective way because they do tally those calls. And so, you know, when you're looking for, oh, what do you do? Should I Twitter? Should I email? They, you know, you don't have to give them a big dissertation about all your reasons and how wonderful you think they are normally and all that kind of crap. You just got to call them up and say, this is who I am. I'm in your district, and this is what I want you to do, and I know you're coming up for re-election next year, so we're watching you. You know, you just got to give them that quick thing and say, you know, I love you, and God save the Queen, and be on about your day.
Yep, that's pretty much it. In simple terms, just, you know, you don't have to understand the difference between deficits and the debt ceiling. You should, but you don't have to. All you have to know is, tell them that you want Obamacare delayed because otherwise it's going to destroy the economy, and you do not want them to cave without delaying Obamacare and getting some spending cuts before they increase this friggin' debt ceiling. Now, if it's just over the six-week period, I could really care less. You know, an extra couple of billion dollars on $17 trillion is not going to swing it one way or the other. But what Obama wants is he wants them to raise it for a year. Well, a year puts us after the next election. It gives them way too much fucking money, and it is going to destroy the economy before the year's up anyway. 6 weeks is enough of a reasonable amount of time without, quote, ending the, quote, shutdown that Harry Reid caused until you get the delay of Obamacare, just merely to get this debt hoax debate off the friggin' table. And listen to people who know what they're talking about. Don't listen to Paul Krugman and Ben Bernanke and Yellen. I mean, at least when Yellen is nominated, assuming that they vote for her and she replaces Bernanke, you know, at least, you know, we'll have one less bitch in the Federal Reserve. And I'm referring to Ben Bernanke. Okay, so, you know, just realize that there's going to be no serious difference. The Federal Reserve chairman or chairwoman, oh, it's going to be historic. She's going to be the first woman. Whatever. I don't really care what her gender or sex is. All I care about is the simple fact that she's merely a mouthpiece for the banks that own the Federal Reserve. And just for all of you who don't understand how this works out there, there are 12 Federal Reserve banks, right? And they're all members of this scheme, and they all have a say in what's going on. Not really. All the shots for monetary policy are not done in D.C. by the Federal Reserve Board of Governors, or, you know, the team there. It's not done by the White House. It's not done by Congress. It's not done by any of the Federal Reserve branches. Every decision is made out of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, which ironically, in an Orwellian twist, is on Liberty Street in Manhattan, which isn't too far from Wall Street. That's where all the decisions are fucking made. You got to understand that it's a scheme. Paul Warburg came up with the name Federal Reserve Bank, right, in order to make it sound like it's a government agency, so they called it federal. It's not federal, okay? It's as federal as Federal Express. They put reserve in there because reserves make people feel as if there's something backing it. There's no reserves. It's all imaginary bits and bytes on paper. And it ain't even really a bank. It's a con game. It's a Ponzi scheme. It's graft, and you're the mark. When the mark figures out the con game, the con is over. Get to understand it. And like I said, a really good place to go, you know, read G. Edward Griffin's Creature from Jekyll Island. Check out Murray Rothbard's What Has the Government Done to Our Money, or The Case Against the Fed, or Ron Paul's book, End the Fed. That's actually very accessible, very limited. It has a list of all the good books you can read. But when you listen to people, don't listen to mouthpieces who shill for the banks. And a lot of them on Wall Street are outright fucking socialists. So, you know, check your investment advisor out. Make sure he's not a friggin' socialist, because most of them are. You think because there's money involved that, you know, they can't be socialists because that's only for capitalists? Let me tell you something. Those who agitate for socialism are the greediest fuckers you will ever know. They want more money. They call them, you know, that's where the term limousine liberal comes from. These are wealthy, elite, rich pricks who make a case for the poor emotionally while they rape everybody who's beneath them. And guess what? These assholes think everybody's beneath them. So learn the tricks. Listen to people who know what they're talking about. Someone like Peter Schiff, he knows what he's talking about. There are a lot of good resources out there. Okay, find them. And we
listen
to
them. Were you going to play a clip?
Yeah, I guess I was. Here's Peter Schiff. I forgot.
Well, I got to listen to President Obama's press conference that he gave yesterday after the Peter Schiff show was off the air, basically staking out his position on the debt ceiling and the government shutdown and, you know, pulling out his talking points again, where he basically says that the debt ceiling is a bad name, that we really shouldn't call it the debt ceiling because it doesn't have anything to do with debt. And if we raise the debt ceiling, we're not going to have more debt. And he said again that it's not going to cost Americans any more money if we raise the debt ceiling, which again are out-and-out lies. But, you know, not one person at that press conference called the president out on the lie and asked him to explain that or qualify those statements because they're so ridiculous. You know, somebody on my YouTube channel, you know, I said, what should we call the debt ceiling? And he came, I don't know why I didn't think of it, but he wrote the debt target, which is far more descriptive of what it is. It's like a target. And whenever we hit the target, we move it back and then we hit it again. And then we hit the target, and then we keep moving the target out every time we hit it. And the challenge is, let's see how quickly we can hit that target again. That's really what it is. But first, have a listen to the president again, trying to explain to people why a higher debt ceiling doesn't mean higher debt. Here, cut number 22.
Explain this. If Congress refuses to raise what's called the debt ceiling, America would not be able to meet all of our financial obligations for the first time in 225 years. And because it's called raising the debt ceiling, I think a lot of Americans think it's raising our debt. It is not raising our debt.
Bullshit.
It does not add a dime to our debt. It simply says you pay for what Congress has already authorized America to purchase. Whether that's the greatest military in the world, or veterans benefits, or Social Security, whatever it is that Congress has already authorized, what this does is make sure that we can pay those bills.
Okay, now, the president, again, is he lying or is he just a moron? He says that if we raise the debt ceiling, it doesn't give us more debt.
I know my vote.
It just lets us pay for things like Social Security or veterans benefits or the greatest military in the world. If we raise the debt ceiling, we can pay for all those things. How? How do we pay for all those things? With debt, by issuing debt, by borrowing money. So raising the debt ceiling means we can pay, in quotes, for all those things with debt. If we don't raise the debt ceilings, then we have to pay for those things with tax revenue. Right? So when he says that raising the debt ceiling doesn't mean more debt, he's lying. That's precisely what it means, because it means we could pay for all the things he wants to pay for with debt, by borrowing money. So See, we can still pay for these things without raising the debt ceiling, but then we couldn't borrow. We couldn't add to the debt. What we would have to do is raise taxes. And then we would have to pay for all this stuff that we promised with tax revenues. But the president doesn't want to tell American citizens that we have to pay for all this government. They want to. He wants to pretend we can get all the government for free. What does he want to do to pay for stuff? He wants to increase the debt. But he can't increase the debt because that damn debt ceiling is getting in the way. See, the only thing that stands between America and more debt is the ceiling. If we don't raise the ceiling, there's no more debt. Now, President Obama says some Americans somehow believe that if we raise the debt ceiling, we get more debt. Yes, they believe it because it's true. How could he not believe it? I mean, someone at the press conference should have said, Mr. President, how are we going to pay for all this stuff if we raise the debt ceiling? We're going to borrow the money. Well, if we borrow the money, doesn't that mean there's more debt? Yes. And if we don't raise the debt ceiling, then what? Then the debt doesn't go up. For him to say on national television, a press conference, that Americans are wrong if they think raising the debt ceiling means more debt, that it doesn't, he's lying.
He's lying. It's kind of weird, though, Chris. Peter Schiff doesn't sound like an Austrian. He sounds like an American. It's weird, but he's Austrian.
Yeah. He's Austrian. You got to remember, most people don't follow this stuff. I've listened to, and so have you, I've listened to quite a few of his shows and clips and interviews and things like that, and he predicted, you know, this current crisis that we're in, and he's one of the few people out there that has been, you know, calling the shots straight right down the line. So I recommend for anybody who wants to learn about this stuff and understand it so that you're not just this confused subject to a bunch of kings and queens and royalty, but a citizen of a country, you know, go to Mises and start reading. And then go to, you know, go on to YouTube and type in Peter Schiff, S-C-H-I-F-F, and start learning. You know, what I like about him is he's very simple. You know, he talks about a complex problem or a complex subject in a very simple terminology. He explains himself well. And you know, you've got to learn because an uneducated citizenry are just subjects. Because that's all we've been since, you know, the Fed, is we had a generation that had no clue what was going on. They had been struggling with the economy ever since, you know, Abraham Lincoln decided to, you know, have a massive war on our continent. And they had been struggling and struggling and struggling. And these bankers, you know, found a way to slip that, you know, central bank in there again ever since Jackson, you know, eliminated the last bank of that, you know, the bank number two.
Second bank of the U.S.
in the country. Yeah. And he got rid of it and actually did some amazing things. In fact, I posted an article, I think I did it in the chat, that had some quotes and ideas from, you know, our founding fathers and Jackson on the debt and stuff. Our founding fathers would roll over in their graves at what's going on in this country because, like you said, they never thought about debt. You know, we just run our country and politics off of it. You know, we pay people to vote for us. You know, and put them on welfare, put them on Medicaid, Medicare, this program, that program, you know, food stamps, whatever, and we're just buying votes. And our founding fathers were free enterprisers. The whole world was a free enterprise. You didn't work, you didn't eat. You know, we didn't have all these social welfare programs. And so I don't think it even came into their mind that it would ever get this bad, so they didn't put good enough safeguards in the system. And so it was left a lot of the future of our country looking forward from that era was the fact that you had an educated free citizenry of the country. Well, somewhere along the line, we've been dumbed down, you know, like I would say 60s in our educational system. People quit learning about our economy. We quit studying the Constitution. You know, there's so many things I remember in school that they just don't teach anything anymore about this stuff. And so we don't know what's going on. And all of a sudden we woke up one day and here we are. We are not moving towards socialism. We are in it. We lost it in the Bush era.
We lost it before that.
Well, but I mean, it really hyper-accelerated. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
at that point, because
sure.
the debt, the centralized power in the administration, all these things that people piss and moan about Obama, yeah, thank Bush, because he was the one that consolidated that power into the administration, you know, into
well,
that
trick,
office. And
the trick that he got to play was, you know, the trick that, and I agree with you, that, look, they've been doing this for a long time. I mean, it started with the Progressive Era, Gramsci, the critical theory, the Frankfurt School infiltrating our educational system, keeping people economically illiterate, and then you mentioned the 60s, the Long March of the Institutions. Let me tell you something. Just because they wear Prada shoes and carry Gucci handbags and wear, you know, $400 sunglasses, a fucking smelly hippie is still a fucking smelly hippie. Now they're in Hugo Boss suits, okay? And they're running your institutions now. But this was their plan from back then, okay? And so you got to fight them on every front. And you're right, we're in the midst of socialism, but there is still something that we can hold on to. And the fact is that our Constitution is the legal framework that we have to enforce, but we are the only nation in the history of mankind founded on a creed, and that creed is found in the Declaration of Independence. And as long as that lives in your heart, you can take this back to the principles of the Constitution, the Declaration, but only if you're willing to fight and only if you're willing to work your ass off. If you're distracted by Dancing with the Douchebags and X Factor and Fox and Fools in the Morning and Good Morning America and all that other crap, you're going to fall for every trick they give you. Wake the fuck up, get busy, call your congressmen, call your senators, go to don'tfundit.com, quit pussyfooting around, because this is our victory to lose, and this can be the pivot point that turns the tide back towards the Constitution. Go ahead.
Well, I was a little history because of my age. I remember my parents' generation. My dad's first house was, I don't know, a little over $10,000. And he made $5,800 a year as a professor in a college and worked 9 months out of the year. And my mom worked once in a while because she had three kids, so she wanted to, you know, mostly be home with the kids. And I remember that era, and it's really interesting because people need to understand this, what has changed in our society, because my parents' generation, who are in their 80s now, that generation has a tremendous amount of personal wealth. Well, why? Because they grew up in the Depression. And so my grandparents didn't have crapola in their lives. You know, they came, left Oklahoma and, you know, came across the U.S. on a dirt road in a Model A Ford with nothing. And my grandmother was a teacher, and my granddad, you know, worked in logging and whatever else. You know, he worked in manual labor. But my parents' generation, you know, grew up with very little, so they were very frugal. And I remember when credit cards came out. And I also remember, you know, just learning growing up, you know, how people made these financial decisions. They saved money up. They never went out and bought a car on a five-year loan. My God, you bought a house on a 10-year loan. You know what I'm saying? Or a 20-year loan. You know, now, I mean, Japan, they got, you know, loans that you will to your children. You know, inflation's so bad. But I also remember that we had high taxation, and this was a very key strategic level for the crooks that have destroyed our economy, was they gave tax write-offs for all interest on everything you bought, whether you bought your cars or your house or your second house or your cabin or your trailer or your boat, or whatever you spent money on for lifestyle improvements was a write-off. Everybody got into that in that era. Everybody started borrowing money and credit cards came out and they because it was a tax write-off and taxes were outrageous through that era. And then once people got into that habit, that debt habit, you know, consumer debt habit, then they gradually started pulling all those tax credits away. Now you got tax credit on nothing. You know, your house,
well,
and not even all of it. And so what happened was,
you get a subsidy for your health insurance, though.
Yeah, and and what they did was they built, in one generation, they went from my parents' generation to the next generation, and they built a consumer debt society. This country built itself off of industry and farming and building things and trade and trading with the world, and now we're consumers. And it's unsustainable. All of this stuff is unsustainable.
It's a trick, Chris. What you pointed out is an absolute trick. And after I'm done here, we're going to go to final thoughts because we're running out of time. But it's a trick. And the trick is that, they had the high taxes, which could be paid because we blew up the world's manufacturing capacity and we're the only ones that were making shit, so everybody had to buy from us, so we were able to tax everybody high and still have a relatively good standard of living. And then they
well, and there was a lot of productivity and increased value. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Go ahead.
And then of course at that time, even though we were on a paper fiat scheme, it was still internationally pegged to gold. All right. Then what happened is the 70s came with the high inflation, and then they got you hooked on, like you said, these write-offs for borrowing. And in an inflationary environment where your dollar is worth significantly less tomorrow than it is today, you have an incentive to either spend it or borrow chunks of it and pay it back over a long time. I mean, if you amortize your mortgage over 100 years instead of 30, that would be even better because your payment would be lower and you'd be paying them back with even more devalued dollars. But this is not the way it's supposed to be with a sound system. So, again, the real trick to understand is that the Republicans, the squishes that have run the Republican Party for most of its history, keep in mind conservatism within the Republican Party is an anomaly. It's the exception to the rule. Goldwater was an exception to the rule. Reagan, exception to the rule. Gingrich, exception to the rule. And now the current exception to the rule is Cruz and Paul and Lee and Amash. These are the exceptions. The run-of-the-mill Republican is as much of a progressive asshole as the Democrats. The difference is that they're subtle engineering differences. And remember when Newt said right-wing social engineering is as bad as left-wing social engineering. The Democrats engineer you socially by taking money away from you and funneling it to those who will vote for them because of giving them certain benefits. The Republicans will manage your behavior equally by giving you tax incentives. How about just not taxing me? See, neither one of them will do that. So the Republicans incentivize you to do things that they like and get you to funnel money towards their corporations by giving you tax incentives, and the Democrats funnel money to their corporations by taxing you. That's how it works. For example, Rex, that's not true. The Democrats don't send money to corporations. Really? You have 47 million people on the SNAP program, the food stamp program, right? 47 million people. Where's that money going? Yes, it's buying food for some people, but for the most part, it's funneling money to the big supermarkets and the agribusiness like Monsanto. And guess who's getting about 2.5% as a VIG on every one of those transactions? That's right, Chase Bank.
Yeah, it's huge.
That's how the corporatism works. And this idea, this dream that all you liberals have of a single-payer system, because the government will be the single-payer, and so therefore everybody will have free health care, all right? There ain't no such thing as a free lunch. And a single-payer system is a corporatist's dream because it puts all the power in one entity with coercive power, and you think that they can fund anything? The government doesn't produce anything. It has no wealth. It's going to get financed by the banks who are then going to use the government's gun to get you to buy crap from their corporations. It's the single biggest corporatist scheme of control ever devised, and you're falling for it, you stupid liberals.
Yeah, we fought a war over this. It was called fascism.
Yep.
I mean, exactly, it's pretty scary.
But this is our victory. This is our victory to lose. When I say victory, I'm not saying winning like that dumbass from the White House said. I'm saying this is a victory for liberty. This is a victory for conservatives. It's a victory for libertarians. It's a victory for the Constitution. And let's get on with it. Anyway, Chris, we're running out of time, so I'm going to final thoughts with you, and then we'll close it out.
No, I think this is great. I'm glad that we're discussing this. I kind of made a note about this a couple of week or two ago saying we need to get back to the economy. We just kind of were forced into it. So it's a good conversation to have. And it's one of those things where what we covered tonight is just could be overwhelming to the average person who's never stepped foot into this arena. But we could build on this and continue, because if you don't have a smart or a educated, mass of people, then all this crap that comes out of the mouths of the mainstream media and the politicians, you know, you're going to believe their crap. And it is. 99% of it's bull crap. There's a very small percentage of these guys who are speaking the truth at all, and they're the ones that are being attacked because they're willing to stand up and speak the truth. I like how, Cruz keeps saying, I have 26 million bosses. and that's who I am representing. And it's a very important thing when he says that, and a lot of people blow that over. Oh, yeah, 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 you know, you're just another politician, and you know, you're vying for power. In reality, he is doing what he was voted in to do, and it's the same with Rand Paul. You know, there are very few guys who have this calm, speaking the truth, holding on to those basic principles, and fighting for the people that elected them. And that's the people that you need to figure out who they are and support them, you know, and also learn to pass their message on, because that's what's going to win this war is information. But, you know, with that being said,
yep,
I mean, it was a great show.
Yeah, I'll, you know, don't get in the habit of doing these Thursday things all the time, but when necessary, we will. But join us at our regular broadcast time, Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, for the Tex and Rex Show with Trog, and we'll bring you, I guess, some up-to-date information on what happened with these negotiations and whatever else might be going on. But the whole point here is authentic conservatism is seeking to conserve the timeless principles enshrined in classical liberal documents, the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution. That's what this fight is about. Delaying the Patient Protection and so-called Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, is about not breaking this economy. The government shutdown, which was caused by Harry Reid not willing to pass clean continuing resolutions, which is when there is no budget, that's typically how it was done until Harry Reid became the majority leader in 2006. Then they started doing these massive omnibus continuing resolutions with all sorts of Christmas presents and Easter eggs jammed inside them. Clean continuing resolutions need to be passed. There's 14 of them sitting on Harry Reid's desk. If he would simply do those things, the government would start to function again, and people would be less freaked out. As far as the debt ceiling goes, they're probably going to raise it, but even if they don't, which would be fine by me, but I suspect they're going to use it as a negotiating tool, we have enough tax receipts coming in to fund the essential things in government. But what you have to do, whether they raise the debt ceiling or not, you have to get spending cuts. The first spending cut is not spending $2.2 trillion on a failed so-called health care bill. Another good spending cut would be taking money out of the defense budget. Oh, my goodness, Rex, national defense is a Republican, third rail. You can't touch it. Bullshit. I'm not talking about taking money out of the military. I'm talking about taking money out of the defense budget. Most of that shit is corporate welfare that goes to defense contractors that spend money on boondoggles and shit that doesn't even help our military. You can cut that stuff out and still have a fully functioning, powerful defensive military. So what we need to do is start going through these things line by line and shit-canning everything that's a waste. And if you have 800,000 non-essential employees, how about you essentially have them go into the private sector? You could do that if you don't have the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, because then maybe someone else should create some jobs, and these 800,000 people who are now currently non-essential federal employees might actually be able to become essential private sector employees. Did you ever fucking think of that?
Yeah.
So,
and
you
learn
know,
how to
let,
actually
let,
work.
Yeah, let's start making some sense. Let's get some fiscal sanity. Remember something. All this is right now, all this pivotal moment to turn things back in the right direction. It ain't going to be roses and sunshine tomorrow. This is just the turning point. It's just the turning point. There's a long war ahead, but you've got to win this battle. And you win this battle by telling the Republicans to not cave. Call Johnny Boehner. Call Eric Cantona, call Mitch McConnell, get these guys to stand firm, and it'll be a principled victory. It'll actually cause some sanity in the government, not a lot, but some, and it'll be an electoral win for the Republican Party, but not merely for the party. It'll be a win for conservatives and libertarians within the Republican Party, because more people are conservative and libertarian than Republican. And so, therefore, this, quote, wacko bird, Tea Party extremist, anarchist, hostage-taking, legislative arsonists wing will grow within the Republican Party.
Strapped to their chest.
Yeah, take over the Republican Party, restore fiscal sanity to Washington, and restore the power of the Constitution. Your representatives, when they're actually representing you, cannot do this without you. you have to do the work. So share the show. Go to the Text and Rec Show page on Facebook and like it. Go to Coalition of Freedom and, you know, get involved in getting real information and strike a blow for victory, for liberty.
Amen.
This is Rex and Trog signing off.
The flames of liberty never die.
Taking a look back at seeing what happened back in 1995, would you say it was worth it? It was worth the risk, not only
Absolutely.
To the country. Absolutely. And why is that?
Absolutely. For two reasons. First of all, as Republicans, no Republican majority in the House had been reelected since 1928. When we stood firm against liberals and we said we were prepared to really fight, all of our base said, you know, these folks are different. They're not normal politicians. They don't just go to Washington to sell out. And we became the first reelected Republican majority since 1928. I've always been puzzled why the Washington establishment, which is liberal, has always said it was a mistake. But there's a second reason. The shutdown convinced President Clinton that we were serious about balancing the budget. As a result, we controlled spending at 2.9% a year, the lowest rate since Calvin Coolidge in the 1920s. We got to a balanced budget by cutting taxes to increase economic growth. And the result was we balanced the budget for four straight years and paid $5 billion of debt. Now, they had to believe that the Republicans were genuinely serious in order for them to have that kind of negotiation when you had a liberal Democrat in the White House. The result was a bipartisan effort that reformed welfare, cut taxes, and balanced the budget with a full employment economy. That ought to be the goals we set for the next Congress, and have the courage to stand toe-to-toe and say to the president, you're not going to be able to intimidate us and blackmail us on basic principle. We're going to do what's right and rely on the American people to see what's happening.
You have to realize that the numbers that Nancy Pelosi was talking about are all above the sequester. There are no numbers equal to the sequester. They're above the sequester. So we're not getting any great spending reduction out of this. I probably can't vote for a continuing resolution that's above the sequester because it's one of the better things we've done in the last couple of years to control spending. But this is a big debate, and it's a debate not about us obsessed with one thing. It's a big debate over Congress has the power of the purse. Congress is supposed to have oversight, and when a program's not going to work or it spends too much money here or there, that's what Congress is for. You have a separation of powers. And when we have divided government, it means we have to get together and negotiate. The fact that they won't negotiate, I think, really is untenable, and I think they're going to have to eventually talk to us.
Peter King was on this show last night, and he blamed all of this on one person, a person that you've been very closely affiliated with. That person, of course, is Ted Cruz, and I wanted to play for you, Senator, what Peter King said about Senator Cruz.
The Republicans have to be more responsible. We have this wing of 30 or 40 or 50 people who are driving us over a cliff that has to end. We have to stop listening to Ted Cruz.
What do you say to that? I mean, there are a lot of Republicans who say that what this core group, a minority group in your party, is doing is destroying your party. Peter King is one of them, but he is certainly not alone.
Yeah. I think it's unfair, actually, because I think the one thing actually that we're very unified on, and you've seen, not everybody agreed on the tactics of how the fight went along. I think that's, I can admit that. Everybody admits that. However, on Obamacare, we're absolutely united. The Republican Senate caucus is absolutely united. We shouldn't fund it. It's bad for America. And America's going to really find this out over the next year or two. It's a disaster for us. I think we're united in the House. But we're also willing to compromise. And that's what the American people need to know. We've been giving and giving and giving. And the president's saying, my way or the highway. And I don't think that's what the American people want.
What if it is such a disaster, though, don't you gain the most by letting it happen and letting it be a disaster? Because now if it's even 1% of success, it might look like a success. I mean, I'm just, you know, Jack Welch said today Republicans have made a bonehead play, which was a, you know, sort of slang way of saying it. He said you're not going to defund his signature legislation. And the polling shows that the American people seem to agree with that. They say avoid the government shutdown is more important than dealing with Obamacare. They say raising the debt ceiling is more important than delaying Obamacare.
I'm not so sure it's as clear-cut as you make it out to be. I think people, particularly the people who elected me, wanted me to stand up and fight on Obamacare. They think it's bad. They think it's going to reduce our choices. I think it takes away your freedom of choice. You're going to have, like in my state, you're going to have four choices where you once had 50 choices. You're going to have one insurance company where you once had 37 insurance companies. So it does take away choice. And my people, They voted for me. 61% of my state voted for Romney. They want me to stand up and fight, but they also don't want the government shut down. So I have been one that says fight, and when we lose, then we have to negotiate. We lost on defunding. I fought for defunding, but we lost. Mm-hmm. The president wants 100%, though, and should he not need to negotiate to get somewhere in the middle in order to get a compromise?
Now, Senator, one final question to you. You just heard Harry Reid when he was asked by the reporters there. From that meeting, do you feel that the debt ceiling will be broached? And, of course, the debt ceiling breached, I'm sorry, is the big thing. That is much bigger than this government shutdown, at least as pertains to the United States economy. And he seemed to indicate that from that meeting, yes, he thinks that it will be. But Lloyd Blankfein, CEO of Goldman Sachs, also met with the president today, and he said, "We are the most important economy in the world. We're the reserve currency of the world. Payments have to go out to people. If money doesn't flow in, money doesn't flow out."
Are you willing
to let the debt ceiling be to not extend it?
I'm for taking default completely off the table and promising to the American people and to the markets, to Wall Street, that we will all pay the interest on the debt as a priority. You know how we do that? We bring in $250 billion in tax revenue every month. The debt payment's about $30 billion. We just promise we'll always pay it. What's going on is, interestingly, the Democrats are scaring people, saying we might not pay it because Republicans don't want to raise the debt ceiling. If you don't raise the debt ceiling, what that means is you'd have a balanced budget. It doesn't mean you wouldn't pay your bills. We should pay the interest, and we should never scare the markets. So if I were in charge, I would say absolutely we will never default. And I would pass a law saying that the first revenue every month, the first revenue has to go to pay the interest.
Right, but it's still defaulting if you're late on Social Security payments or anything like
that. Why would you be late on your Social Security payments? We have a bill that's called the Full Faith and Credit Bill, and we've passed it in the House before. We've introduced it in the Senate, and it says you pay Social Security, you pay Medicare, you pay your soldier's salaries, and you pay the interest on the debt. We've got money for all of that.
China.
Happen a lot? Government commandeering your ship, telling you where to go?
That's what governments are for, getting a man's way.